Members, we're going to call the tax committee to order this morning. And we can recall that yesterday we heard it, we walked through it, we did the spreadsheet, we had questions, and we got to public testimony. So today we're all about the amendments. So I think before, seeing no amendments, the motion to, without a roll call, I think we first want to hear from Representative Zeller, who has some good news for us. Representative Zeller.
Thank you, I'm sure. And before we get to the rest of the committee, I want to thank the committee members, especially Representative Solberg and yourself. Earlier this year, we heard a bill dealing with printing companies and Nexus and how they're defined, and we had a few testifiers in here who made some pretty scary predictions if we didn't pass it clean and if we didn't get it in and out very quickly. And a lot of times in here we have a lot of rhetoric and just maybe a little bit of hyperbole in our conversations, but in this case, these folks actually had an amazing turnaround. Mr. Fred Bigpen, who is a constituent of mine at R.R. Donnelly, which is a printing company in my district, I spoke to him recently, and because of the bill we passed, thanks to Representative Solberg and the members of the Tax Committee, since we passed the bill, they've had $170 million worth of contracts committed, and a lot of those contracts, as he testified, were being held up or being put on pause until we passed that bill, until their clients knew exactly what was going to happen. So even though we may have a little bit of partisanship in here, that was a great job, and I want to thank Representative Solberg and members of the Tax Committee and members of both caucuses on the floor. We got that bill in, out, and signed, and at least one printing company in my area. I know the examples are just like that all over the state, but in my area alone, it was $170 million worth of contracts since we passed that bill. So thank you, Jim Solberg, and thank you, Chairman Chesky.
Thank you, Representative Zeller. You were relentless in your pursuit. Representative Solberg.
No. But quite frankly, also, I think the testimony that was given is very compelling. And, they need to be congratulated on coming forth and giving a good idea. You may have good ideas, but unless you understand the implications, for them.
Thank you. And Representative Zeller and Solberg, don't bring those people back again. On a different item. They were very good. Thank you for that. Okay, so members, we've got some amendments. I should say that I've talked to Ms. Templin this morning. There's still things moving around the spreadsheet a little bit, so we're going to be getting updates throughout the day as final estimates on revenue estimates or final revenue estimates come through. There is a tilt issue that is still yet to be resolved because the environment finance folks carried some tax language and made a change there, and we're trying to figure out how to get that back to the tax committee, so that's still brewing, and we're working on that. So unless members have questions, I was going to take either, let's say we have a Loeffler amendment, if you're ready, and we have a Reinert amendment. So if the papers could pass out the Loeffler amendment. Yeah, I'm not doing that now. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. While the pages are passing this out, I can
remind you. Okay, Representative Loeffler, you're not really on the mic. It's hard to hear you. Or maybe it's just noise. Okay, there you go.
Thank you. Just to remind the committee, this is the bill that we heard on Saturday, and on Monday I got the expected confirmation from the Department of Revenue that there's no state impact. It would simply allow Minneapolis to use its current local option sales tax, which is dedicated to the repayment of convention center debt, to use any excess in that debt or in the local option sales tax beyond what's required for convention center operating and debt, to use it in the first 2 years to react to losses in local government aid, and thereafter to use it for neighborhood capital improvements, just like the St. Paul special levy is. And the this was brought in late because we needed to figure out, first of all, that it was going to provide some relief because interest rates have been fluctuating. They're now down. They're on variable rate bonds and are going to a fixed rate, and this might provide a little bit of relief, maybe, but it's probably likely $1 million or less a year to begin with. So it's a pretty small amount, but it's every little bit may count in the types of budgets our cities are facing. And I've talked with all the Minneapolis legislators on the committee and others, and they're comfortable with this.
Okay, I'm going to move House Bill 2323 to get it before us, the omnibus tax bill. Representative Loeffler, your motion, do you have your amendment? So we can get it on the
Madam Chair, the amendment is H2323A4. I move that for inclusion.
Thank you for that motion. Can you just hang on one moment? We're having a little confusion here because we do have an author's amendment, and we don't know if are these amendments all drafted to the author's amendment. Good. Okay. So all amendments are in order right now. I am going to have an author's amendment, but there's still things being changed, and it's mostly a technical cleanup and a few issues. But until we get that all in order, I don't want to. You know, most members are used to getting the author's amendment first, but it's not done. So I was just checking with the staff here. Were the amendments for committee members drafted to the author's amendment or to the bill? And they're on the bill, so we're okay. To the delete everything. So we're fine. Okay, so we can take the Loeffler amendment. It works. Okay, so Representative Loeffler moves the H2323A4 amendment. Could I just ask Representative Dabney and Muller to chime in here so we all know Minneapolis is happy? Representative Dabney.
Happy, happy.
Representative Muller. Just happy. And if this is a zero item. And this is a zero item bill, and we heard the Representative Lott. Do you want to weigh in, Representative Lott? How does Chris Paul feel about that? Okay, questions? Discussion? If not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carried. Thank you. Representative Reiner. And let's see, it's right here for the pages. If we could get this amendment passed out. I'll give it. She has one. And I'm just going to tell folks while we're waiting, it's right here. There's a few amendments that I am not yet taking up because the authors aren't here, but also because I have not heard the final word unless Representative Coonan can tell us on the junkie issue with Olin that we have the public testimony. Is that one ready this morning? Okay, well, let's check, because do you all remember the Olin bill on the property tax credit and the income credit and then a grant, and then Representative Davids was reminding Representative Olin which committee he was in, and we all said we talked to Representative Junkie, and I have done that, and he has now as well, but we have not yet heard if Junkie and the Department of Ag and everyone's got this worked out. We think it's all worked out, but we'll just try to hunt people down and check that out before we take that vote. Okay, so Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move the A11 amendment.
Okay, Representative Reiner moves the A11 amendment. Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A11 amendment is pretty straightforward. When we're talking about liquor sales and potentially increased liquor taxes, if you've got a district like mine that shares a complete north-south border with Wisconsin, you lose a lot of business over the bridge on Sundays. So this proposal would allow local municipalities the option to not allow for sales on Sunday. It's modeled after the language the legislature adopted, giving local municipalities the option to stay open later from 1 a.m. to 2 a.m.
Okay, thank you. Discussion of the amendment. Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I would speak against this amendment. I have a number of liquor store establishments in my district, and they oppose this. This would basically put everybody on notice. If they want to compete, they have to stay open on Sunday. And right now, they would just as soon not have that competitive obstacle put in front of them. So, I mean, I appreciate the fact of where this is located, but I guess I just see this as being something that's going to open the door. There's a lot of people in the industry that do not appreciate this.
Representative Reiner, if you have a response, or otherwise we're going to go to Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would just, a couple things here. The district I am privileged to represent has borders, more miles of borders with any foreign country than anyone in this committee, being Iowa and Wisconsin. And so you might think that I would say, hey, this is a good idea. It's a competitive issue. We're along the Iowa border and Wisconsin border. But I guess my question would have to be, why wasn't this? We have a liquor committee, subcommittee of commerce. And anytime this comes up in commerce, and if you go back to the tapes from this year, it's World War III when you bring this up. The liquor folks in the state of Minnesota are very, very much opposed to this as a statewide organization. And I would just wonder if the amendment wouldn't be more appropriate, because there's a lot of policy in this, whether we're going to be selling liquor on Sundays. And people have, I would think that this would be an amendment to the omnibus liquor bill on the House floor after a long discussion with Chair Atkins. So I would respectfully have to speak against this amendment, because it opens up a whole can of worms that have nothing to do with tax committee.
Okay, thank you. And folks know this committee is where Jermaine is kind of has a little more flexibility. But we hear you, Representative David, that in fact this, the folks on Representative Atkins' committee might care deeply about this. Representative Reiner, you want to respond to? And I think not sure if I have Representative Carlson on the list, if he was being recognized, and Representative Zeller. Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Representative David's point, you're right. One of the things I've learned so far is if you care about an issue, to try and bring it up as often and everywhere you can. So I'm going to put it forward today to represent the businesses in my district, but this issue has actually been heard in Commerce, and members should know, and I suppose most do, that it was defeated in Commerce. So that gives you a little bit of the legislative scope.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Carlson, were you trying to be recognized? No, Representative Zeller.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and as lead on the Commerce Committee, I do have to raise the point, Representative Reinhardt. The issue I understand, and the issue, whether or not we get there or not, at some point in time, I think is inevitable, but for right now, the folks in the industry we've talked to, the Commerce Committee, where we heard this, did not pass, and while germane this is a theory here, maybe not a practice, I fully appreciate that, and as a freshman, to pick up the con strategy this early on, I compliment you. It is everywhere and often. You're ahead of the ball game, but I'd be shirking my duties in the Commerce Committee and with Chair Atkins. We did put together an omnibus bill, and believe me, I've there are a few liquor bills that have controversy on them, but this one, I just don't think quite yet. I'm sure we'll hear it on the floor, and maybe that's maybe on that side it'll be on your side. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion? Further discussion? If not, we're going to call for the vote. Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Okay, further amendments. And Representative Coonan, were you able to? We think now, and I guess Mr. Michael, I don't see him, but I think the amendment, and Representative Coonan can tell us if it's said. I think what happened was there was an appropriation put in to make sure that the Department of Ag could administer. No. Someone's thinking there, no. You're not ready yet, Representative Coonan?
No, I don't know.
Or? Representative Coonan.
Madam Chair, the amendment is ready, but there is no funding for the Ag Department to administer the program. We don't have a fiscal note, and I suspect that funding should be going through the Ag Committee anyway.
Okay, and Representative Coonan, I was working on this last night around 11:30 or midnight with staff, and I think we are trying to get it into the bill, so we'll just hold off on that one. Okay, further amendments. So we've got two bill amendments. Is Representative Jill here? No. Representative Coonan's holding. Any other amendments? Are there any other amendments?
No.
Representative Anderson, please.
Yeah, I've got an amendment if the pages want to hand it out.
Sure. Who's good? About what? So while we're waiting for Representative Anderson's amendment, members, I know that folks are looking for some of their amendments, and I want to thank the minority and the staff who's been working late And feel free to send notes to the pages to have them go to your office and find them or whatever you need to do. Because I know it's, you know, people are still drinking coffee here, so it's kind of a slow start. Representative Anderson, Representative Anderson moved the H2323A 19 Amendment. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A member said, earlier this morning, actually, Representative Lentesky was referencing the whole twins debate that happened here at the legislature a couple of years ago. And it was actually after that whole issue was passed here at the legislature that I first ran for office. And I tell you, going door to door, I was never more thankful not to be an incumbent, because I heard more often of people upset because they didn't have a chance to vote on that sales tax increase. I represent an area that resides in the Hennepin County area, and those folks weren't allowed the opportunity to vote on it. And whether they were for it or against it, they still wanted to have the opportunity to vote. Then last year we passed the gas tax increase, and in that included a sales tax increase again for the Hennepin County area. Actually, it was our whole metro area that was automatic. The people didn't get to vote here in the metro area, but out in greater Minnesota they were allowed to vote. And again, that raised the ire of the people that I represent. I imagine some of you heard from your constituents about it as well. And so when I saw this bill yesterday and talking about the county sales tax again, the half-cent sales tax, I thought, well, I don't want to hear it from the people at the doors that I didn't try to give them the opportunity to vote on this. I think it's only right that we give them that chance to vote on whether they're going to pay a higher sales tax in their county, particularly in the Hennepin County area. When you travel downtown Minneapolis, you pay a significantly higher sales tax than you do anywhere else in the state. So, members, this is what this amendment does, is it gives the people of our state the opportunity to approve on the front end of whether they support this county-wide sales tax increase. And, Madam Chair, I would like to have a roll call, please.
Representative Anderson requests a roll call on the A-19 amendment. And, members, Representative Marquardt, please.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I would ask members to oppose the A-19 amendment. This is not a statewide tax. This is a county local option sales tax. It currently has a reverse referendum in place, unlike the transit tax or unlike the Twin Stadium tax, which did not even have a reverse referendum, which has been approved by the governor and this legislative body in the past. Members, we have local control. Voters do have a chance to elect or not to re-elect commissioners who would vote for this. So members, we've got reverse referendum. We have plenty of public input in this. And members, I'd ask that you vote no.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to that point, Representative Anderson, I appreciate the effort. But the only way that I would vote for this is if the question asked the voters, do you prefer to raise the property taxes or do you prefer to raise the sales tax in order to fund the functions of county government? Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative, okay, Anderson, then Broad, then Zeller. Representative Anderson.
Well,
and Cole.
Madam Chair, you know, when I worked here at the legislature, actually I worked for Representative Jim Knobloch, and at that time they were proposing a city sales tax increase, a local option sales tax, and that entire city and the surrounding areas had to vote to approve it before it could even be brought to the legislature, and that's all I'm asking for here.
Let's see. Okay, I don't know how Murphy got there. She must have already been on there, but then I have Murphy, Zeller, Broad is supposed to be on here too. I don't see her. Oh, you're first. You look crossed out. Sorry about that. Broad. Represent Broad.
Madam Chair, it's probably Freudian if I'm crossed out. But Madam Chair, I think we've learned a lot since the stadium debate. I certainly heard from many folks in Hennepin County, and I think that they maybe do deserve the opportunity to vote up front. And from a management standpoint for a city or a county, it would seem to me that it would be much better to know before you move forward with a project that you have this that you have the support of your voters, if that support is part of the process. And a reverse referendum essentially says that they're going to go ahead, but the city or the citizens can pull it back. And so I'm not sure why it wouldn't be better to have that approval, if approval is designated and it is in your bill, to have that approval up front. I think from a management standpoint, it makes a heck of a lot more sense and actually is much more workable.
Okay, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. And this is for Representative Anderson. It's funny, I think this is probably indicative of the districts we represent. So where I live, when I'm at the doors, folks say, you know, stop putting this out to the voters. Make a decision. We elected you to go make this decision. You have a hard job to do, and we understand that, but it's up to you. And please do your job. Don't keep throwing this stuff out to us. So I think, you know, that's probably the difference of our district, but I think it's very important that be a part of the testimony here today.
Thank you. Representative Zeller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Anderson, for bringing this amendment forward. There were many, many of us after the, on a bipartisan basis in the Hennepin County delegation that would have liked to have this opportunity when that stadium bill came forward that some of us will be paying for many, 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 many years to come. So, you know, at that point, a lot of the proponents of the stadium said, well, don't be afraid of the voters. They would have passed this, but we don't want to now. We just want to get forward, going forward. So during that debate, lots of folks said, well, the voters are with us, but we just don't want to waste the time with the vote. So in this case, just, you know, don't be afraid of the voters. If it's truly worthy and if it's truly going to pass, they will pass it. So, Madam Chair, I'd appreciate votes on the Anderson Amendment.
Thank you, Representative Sellers. Representative Cole.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, recall last night we heard the counties come down and testify that they had significant concerns about this provision. I think they're, while I don't want to pretend to speak at all for the counties, I think some of the concern that we heard last night is related to what Representative Broad said, and that is they move forward and then have essentially the rug pulled out from under them by the voters on a reverse referendum. I have always been one who has believed that on issues like this, we should not be afraid of the voters. We should absolutely give voters an opportunity to weigh in. We certainly do get sent here to make a lot of decisions, and as do our county boards and city councils. But to not put such a significant issue like this before the voters when we have the opportunity to do so, I think would be a real mistake. And so I hope members will support the Anderson Amendment.
Thank you. Representative Garner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With no offense to my friend and colleague, Representative Marquardt, I am going to support this for reasons that are similar to Representative Anderson. My district backs up against a parcel that would have been a site for the Anoka County Viking Stadium. And ever since I was in cahoots with the folks who were seeking a chance to have a voice on this, when Anoka County said, we know what's best for you, they I have been very conscious of this issue, and even though I'm a strong supporter of transit, I supported a referendum for the transit tax, and I'm going to support the referendum today for the local option sales tax.
Okay, further discussion. Senator Marquardt.
Thank you very much. First of all, to clarify the testimony of the counties, is they would like the reverse referendum removed. That's their big concern. They would just like to do that. We have a reverse referendum, unlike the Twin Stadium bill, and on April 26th of 2006, Representative Lentesky, you had an amendment to require a referendum on the Twin Stadium, and several members of this committee voted no on that. And so, you know, I know we can, and I do it too, you know, you switch votes based on the situation and so forth, but in concept, it's the same. We need to leave things to local control. If the citizens have a problem with what is being done, they can not re-elect their commissioners. So please vote no.
Okay, members, I want to urge a no vote, and my thoughts on this are, I was the author of the Twin Stadium referendum on the House floor that failed by one vote. So I felt pretty darn strongly, and, you know, folks who know me well in this issue know I still resent that my colleagues who didn't live in Hennepin
thought it was a great idea that the rest of us should pay for the stadium for 30 years. And many members in this room voted to not let the people of Hennepin have a vote on that. Both sides of the aisle. And so I feel strongly that people should get to vote. The reason I'm going to urge people to vote no on this amendment right now is because we've been working very hard to put pieces in the tax bill, contrary to what people may think, that we believe are signable. The governor has signed numerous local option sales taxes and two county option sales taxes without a vote at all or a reverse referendum. The governor's position would be to have, I guess, in past practice, would be to have no vote and no reverse referendum. As someone who likes to vote, I think Representative Markowitz's concept threads the governor's position and those who would like people to have a vote. And this allows the opportunity for a vote in a reverse referendum. So I'm going to urge members to vote no. Representative Broad.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't want to renew that debate. Again, we should all be learning from the mistakes we made. I also want to make sure that I don't recall the governor's position as being a position of no referendum. I believe the statement that was always made by the governor is that he has a preference for an upfront referendum, but that wasn't the bill that was presented to him. The bill that was presented to him did not have a referendum, and so I think it's a mistake to characterize the governor's position as a position of non-referendum.
And thank you, and I think. But I do recall that the governor had a very public signing of the bill. He didn't let it pass without a signature. He didn't veto it. He had a very public signing of the bill. So Representative Davis.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to make sure that it's on the record that the people of Fillmore and Houston County appreciate Hennepin County paying for the new Twin Stadium.
You're welcome. Representative Anderson, then we're going to call for the vote.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just to respond to your comments, you know, when I woke up this morning, I didn't look in the mirror and see Governor Tim Pawlenty. It was me, and it's us that are sitting here today making this decision, not the governor. And, folks, you know, when I look at this issue, I really see it as a backdoor way to increase the sales tax. And we are not giving the folks an opportunity to vote on this. And we've heard testimony in this committee time and time again that a sales tax is one of the most regressive taxes that we could impose on our people. And yet here we are trying to do it in a backdoor way. I just think it's the wrong approach. We, at the very least, need to give people the opportunity to vote on this issue, and I ask for your support.
Okay. I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor, say... Someone asked, Representative Anderson wanted a roll call. I apologize. I'm going to call the roll.
Chair Lanchesky?
No.
Anderson?
Aye.
Broad?
Yes.
Carlson?
No.
David?
Yes.
Dabney?
No.
Zimmer?
Yes.
Hill? Dietrich?
No.
Downey?
Yes.
Eastland?
Aye.
Gardner?
Yes.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Hillstrom?
No.
Coonan?
No.
Coles?
Aye.
Lanning? Lesh?
No.
Liebling?
No.
Loeffler?
No.
Loon?
Aye.
Marquardt?
No.
Mallory?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Reinert? Bukovina?
What's the council's plan? I'm not going to ask about no.
Reed?
Yes.
Solberg?
No.
Tilbury?
No.
Zellers?
Aye. That's pretty cool. 15-13.
Oh, I didn't know that. Those voting aye are 13, voting no is 15. The motion, the amendment does not prevail. For, let's see, who, not sure what we're on now. Does anyone have an amendment? I see. I've got Coonan, not ready, and Bill. Okay.
I got an amendment.
Okay. Representative Broad. Okay, does everyone have it yet? Have we got it? Okay, so Representative Broad, are we on the A18
amendment.
Okay, so Representative Broad now moves the H2323 A18 amendment. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What this amendment will simply do is create a sunset for the income tax increase that is contained within this bill. We often have been talking about the principles contained in this bill as things we have to do in order to solve the budget deficit. And it just seems to me that when you think about the fact that 95% of businesses actually run their tax returns through their personal income tax, this is very specifically, this 9% increase is a tax on small businesses, the folks who are creating jobs out in our communities, and I think it's a mistake, first of all, to put it in place. But if you're going to put it in place, to allow it to continue out into the future. And so, Madam Chair, what this will do is very simply put a sunset on that tax increase, which will make us one of the top income tax states in the nation. Higher than we already are.
Okay, Representative Lane.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Broad, yesterday we had a long discussion about the out years, and can you just help me understand how this fits in with your concern about the fact that our bill isn't balanced in the out years? I mean, you were really concerned about that, and you had that amendment, and, you know, this was something that we went on for quite a long time about this, and now what I understand this amendment to be doing is making that situation work. Could you please help me understand why you're doing that?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Liebling. Actually, what this will require us to do is to make the hard decisions up front on the other bills. So this does nothing in terms of the out years, because this is the first bill, hopefully, that will pass off the House floor. I've always been an advocate of passing the tax bill first so that we know what we have to spend in the other areas. And so if we do the appropriate thing, which is find out how much money we have to spend before we spend it, then this would do nothing to incur additional liability or debt in the out years.
That's unwilling.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I mean, I think what you're saying here is that you don't really care if the tax bill is unbalanced because you'd rather cut spending. And, you know, I sit on Health and Human Services, as you do, and actually, of course, that's going on right now as we see here today. And, you know, we're making some pretty bad cuts there already, and we're hurting a lot of people. And so, you know, it's nice to sit and talk about this kind of in the abstract, and you talk about the people who create jobs. Well, I think that the people who are losing their jobs and who need to have adequate funding for the services the state provides to get through this recession, I think those people would be very, very hurt by the proposal that you're making, Representative Broad. You know, I think for us to have sat here all that time yesterday and talked about how our bill was unbalanced and now come here today and kind of not care that it's unbalanced, I think it's a little unfortunate.
Madam Broad, just to follow up, Representative Liebling, I'm not trying to say anything. What I said was, we cannot get out of this budget deficit by continuing to hurt the folks that are creating jobs for the people of the state of Minnesota. This income tax increase will do exactly that. Small businesses throughout the entire state on Main Street in every one of our districts are struggling. And the worst thing we can do is add additional burden onto those folks. And so I absolutely want our budget to be balanced. There's no question about it. I feel very strongly about that. But the best way to balance our budget going forward is to ensure the economic sustainability and the economic prosperity of the people who are creating jobs in our communities. And so when you think about what we're doing here today and what we ought to be doing with this bill should not just be about balancing the budget. This bill should be about setting our state up for economic recovery. Having one of the highest income taxes in the state does not do that. One of the best ways we can recover so that we can expand our budget to help the folks that you're talking about is to get them a job, is to have opportunities for jobs. The only way you do that is by cutting taxes. And so as we have these tough discussions, what we're talking about is living within our means and having the state do exactly what you're asking these small businesses to do. You cannot spend more than you have. You can't do it. So what we need to do is give them the tools, give them the opportunities to reinvest in their communities, and that means cutting their taxes.
That's from Garofalo, then Marquardt, then Dabney, then Colt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess the Chair of the Ways and Means Committee is here, and we had this discussion yesterday. I'm actually willing to vote against the broad amendment if the majority party is committed to actually balancing the tails like every other finance committee is. And that was my impression coming in yesterday. So I'm willing to stand with my Democrat friends and oppose this amendment if we are committed to balancing the tails. So the question I have for the majority party and the Chair of the Ways and Means Committee, if he so desires to answer it, is are we going to balance the tails or not?
Okay.
And I guess I kind of like an answer to that before I choose how I'm going to vote on this bill.
Okay, and members?
Amendment, I mean, not the bill, the amendment.
Right.
I want to vote on the bill. No.
You're still thinking about how to vote on the bill?
No. Madam Chair, I am not. I am fully informed and ready to vote on the bill.
Okay, that's on folder. Could we have an answer for Garofalo, and then we'll move to Rep. Marquardt, please.
If you recall that we are trying our best to control tails, and the budget resolution talks about this biennium only, and if the law that was passed was enacted, this is not enacting. But it's kind of interesting in this particular amendment, coming from a Republican, we realize right off the bat that there's a need for revenue in this biennium, just like the governor.
Thank you. And Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, so you're saying enacted. Am I to understand then that at some point we're going to get out of here, we're going to pass an omnibus tax bill, that bill that's signed into law will have to address the issue of the upcoming biennium? Is that my correct understanding?
On projections, yes. But I think the words in the broad amendment as amended on the Senate floor, as it is right now, is enacted. That means that the governor has to participate in that as well. Well, no, just a minute. It was your amendment, and the governor wasn't really happy with your amendment.
Well, it was a broad Solberg amendment.
Okay, Representative Solberg.
No, it was a broad amendment.
We'll
let
this come
in. Madam Chair, it was a broad amendment as amended by the Solberg. amendment.
Madam Chair, to that point. I'd like to wrap this up.
Let's try to stay on the amendment. So, yep. Rep. Garofalo.
So, Madam Chair, members, I'm trying to understand, is it the goal of the majority party that we are going to balance the tails target with this tax bill when it leaves the House floor? And what I'm hearing is the answer is no. They don't care about the tails right now. They care about the tails when we enact the legislation. So given that lack of concern for the tails, I'm going to support the broad amendment now, but I'm willing to refine my position on the issue if I hear the majority party commit to balancing the tails with this bill leaving the floor. Thank you.
Okay, so Representative Broad, you want to respond to Representative Solberg?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, I wish that you had been able to be here yesterday because we had a great discussion about our amendment, and it really binds us. It really binds the legislature, and the governor's job is done and taken care of in regards to proposing a budget. And now it's our job. Our job is to balance the tails, and our job is to balance a budget for 4 years. That's what the law states. We must enact a budget that does that. And so, Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, is it your intention to have balanced tails going forward this year?
Representative Solberg.
Adams was doing this episode. Madam Chair and Representative Broad, as you know what the system is, the budget resolution requires us to stay within the budget resolution for this biennium. There's no guarantee at this particular point that there's a budget resolution for TAILS. There is no TAILS regulation. We cajole. We have a target for them as best we can. The law says the governor and the legislature, the governor and the legislature must enact. That means that the governor is involved in this as well. And I'll stay with that.
Madam Chair,
but I also like the fact that we've also recognized already in this particular amendment that there's a need for revenue in this particular biennium.
Madam Chair, that is exactly the opposite of what this amendment actually says. It's a nice spin. It's a good try. But what this amendment says is if the majority decides to enact a tax increase on business owners in our state, on families in our state, this says that it will not go out indefinitely. There's going to at least be a cap on it in terms of how many years that can be in place. So I'm not voting for this tax increase because I don't believe it's necessary. I think we should live within our means. So this amendment does not do that. But Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, we should balance our tails. I put this amendment out there today to give us the opportunity to decide whether we were going to balance going forward or not. I'm going to withdraw the amendment because I believe we should balance our tails. And I hope, Representative Solberg, that you will, and the majority party will live within the law. The statute says we have to balance our budget for 4 years. And so the tax bill we have here today does not do that. The tax bill we have here today is $1.5 billion short. Minnesotans should know where that $1.5 billion is coming from. They absolutely should know that before they decide whether what we're doing here, what you guys are going to pass here, is the right thing to do. And Madam Chair, I just wanted maybe Mr. Michael, before I withdraw the amendment, to just talk a little bit about a drafting piece of the amendment just to make sure that we're clear on the record what the amendment actually does.
Okay, so if I understood correctly, Rep. Broad withdraws the H2323A18 amendment.
Oh, I'm disappointed.
Okay, Rep. Rukavina.
Madam Chair.
Oh. I apologize, I misunderstood. Did you not want to withdraw?
Madam Chair, I'd like, before I withdraw it, I'd like Mr. Michael to explain the drafting components of this so everybody is aware of what the amendment actually does.
I was focusing on Representative Rukavina last night. I was trying to get him back, but sorry, I didn't hear you. I apologize. Mr. Michael, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the amendment, should read on lines 5, 8, and 11, 9 should be deleted and 7.85 should be inserted in each of those places so that the rate reverts to the regular, to the current top rate. This is, you know, sort of the effect of drafting stuff at midnight and not proofing it. I
apologize for that.
Okay.
Okay, so are we set then?
It's been withdrawn. Representative Rukavina. Are you ready for your amendment, Representative Rukavina?
Yeah.
Okay, Representative Rukavina members. Representative Rukavina now moves.
No,
the
he's going to go. Sellers is going to go now.
Oh, okay. Members, if, okay, what amendment is that? Do we have it up here? Okay. We're going to do it. We have the Rukavina one. That's why I was calling it up.
It's right, yeah, it's right there.
Okay, Representative Sellers.
It's the A11.
Sure, no problem.
And it, Madam Chair, I'll just start to explain it real quick. It's no big surprise, I'm sure. This is a reduction in the corporate rate. We've had a number of different bills. Madam Chair's had a number of different bills to try to get at the corporate rate reduction to make our business climate a little more friendly or a little more competitive as well with our surrounding states as well as across the global economy. In the past, I've offered amendments to repeal it altogether, written bills to do a point a year for the next 10 years. What this amendment simply does, Madam Chair, is it's a very small message but nonetheless a message that we will reduce the corporate rate 1 point over the next biennium, and then hopefully as we start that ball rolling, we can maybe go to, you know, another point next year, maybe pick up 2 points in the future. But just for now, Madam Chair, it's a point a year in the reduction of corporate rate. And as we've heard here, many of our testifiers have come up to say that the state of Minnesota right now is not competitive when it comes to the corporate rate. This is not something that a bunch of rich bankers and rich business people are paying. This is something that is passed through to their customers, or in a lot of cases what we've seen, this is actually reducing the amounts that the employees can make, the amount of benefits that can be offered to the employees, the amount of research and development that can go into new product expansion, new sales routes, whatever it may be. But some of these dollars, they're not being paid by the rich owners of the companies. These taxes are being passed through, or they're costing employees jobs, and they're actually costing, in some cases, benefits being offered. So, Madam Chair, that's the amendment. Hopefully everybody should have it now.
Okay, Representative Coles. I mean, who are you?
All right. He's better looking. And that's the amendment, Madam Chair, and I ask for a roll call.
Okay, so I just got it now. So, Representative Zellers now moves the H2323A11 amendment. Representative Zellers requests a roll call.
Madam Chair.
Okay, discussion. Representative Colbert.
I understand this also repeals the PCR. Is that correct? Yep.
Representative Zellers.
Yes, Madam Chair, as directed by many members, and I would say by some members, chastised to pay for your amendment. That's what we've done. Not going to offer something that's going to, as the discussion's been going on here for many weeks, go throw the budget out of balance. So the amendment is paid for, Madam Chair, Representative Silver.
Thank you.
Okay, so for the question.
So.
Discussion.
Okay.
Representative Liebling, Marquardt, Solbert.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Zellers, I'm sorry, there was a lot of commotion while you were first explaining this, and I didn't exactly hear what you're trying to do with the the second half. I understand you're paying for the repealing the PCR, and I actually would have something to say about that, because I think, you know, even though that sometimes it doesn't, people don't necessarily understand what that is. I think that the PCR program is pretty critical to having relatively clean elections and fair elections in this state. So I think that's a pretty important program, but I would just like to hear you explain a little bit more what you're trying to do with the rest of the amendment, if you wouldn't mind just going through that one more time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, we're reducing the corporate income tax rate by 1 point a year in the next biennium. It's balanced this biennium going forward, to the chair of the Finance Committee. It is not balanced going forward, but at a rate point a year, what we've heard in some of the economists' discussion, again, because we do static, not dynamic analysis, that reduction in the rates could indeed stimulate economy, could increase job growth, could... Just like raising taxes could pay for our budgets going forward. Again, we are in a static analysis system, not dynamic. But for Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, we heard you listened and balanced our amendments. Appreciate members' support.
Okay, so we've got Representative Marquardt, Carlson, yeah. Hilstrom, Dabney, Liebling. Representative Liebling.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Zellers, did you discuss what you're doing in 3.21 in that section?
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, I'm reducing the renter's credit, correct.
Representative Zellers, is it accurate by reading it to say that you're converting it to as a percentage of rent paid, or are you actually just reducing it? It's a little unclear to me.
No, reducing it as a percentage.
We can ask the draft. We can ask staff. I think they have a little confusion too as well.
Oh.
Can we just ask Mr. Michael how it's reading here, Mr. Michael?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, what this amendment does is reduce the corporate tax rate by one percentage point and pay for that by repealing the political contribution refund and converting the property tax refund for renters to actual taxes paid, not a percentage of rent. And I don't know whether the numbers on that work out, but that's what the amendment does. There are estimates. It looks like Ms. Schill is going to tell you how the numbers would work out on this.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this appears to be similar to House File 1874 that recalculates the percentage of rent constituting property taxes. I have a revenue estimate on this particular file that it has a cost savings of $63.4 million in FY 2011, and then that grows as we go into the tails. Now, there's a fiscal note also associated with that that will bring those monies down somewhat, because the cost of administrating this particular provision is about $2 to $3 million, and the fiscal note is not yet complete. The elimination of the political contribution fund is $10.4 million in FY 10 and 11, and then an additional cost savings of $11.8 million in the tails. So from what I can gather between the conversation that Ms. Templin and I had, yes, this amendment funds itself, and there's even more money at the bottom line.
Okay, thank you. Representative Carlson.
Yesterday, but speaking to Mike, I happen to be one of the members, along with probably Representative Kahn and maybe Representative Murphy, that was here when we put the political contribution credit in place the first time. Then it disappeared for a time, and then we reinstated it. But I think I want to remind people why that was put in place. And this was put in place originally at the height of Watergate. And there was a lot of information at the time about how money was contaminating the political process across the country. And Minnesota was considered one of the leading states in terms of the reform at the time. With the goal of the political contribution credit and the checkoff, they were both instituted at that point in time, was to increase the role of the average citizen in the political process. And that's the incentive that's built into both the checkoff and the political contribution credit. And I think it would be, in terms of just simply the ethics, if you will, of how we finance political campaigns and so on, a major step backward if we were to eliminate the contributions.
Thank you. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know where to begin with this amendment, quite frankly. There's so many different parts moving on it and so forth. But I want to start with the elimination of political contribution refund. Folks who are watching this today, make no mistake about this. If we go along with the Zellers Amendment, this will protect incumbents. This will give incumbents a huge advantage in their re-election. And so if you're thinking about running for office at some point, you are going to be at a great disadvantage against all of us incumbents who have built up some war chests. I'm willing to bet almost every one of us, if we went on to the political campaign finance report, would see several thousand dollars on the bottom line in each of our campaign funds. This will also hurt those trying to run to gain funding. It will hurt the average person from contributing. So members, if you want to protect incumbents, support this one. The second thing on the renter's credit. First of all, about 28% statewide who benefit from the renter's credit are senior citizens or those with disabilities. And those who are in the rural districts, that percent hits 40, 50, 60% are senior citizens. And I know Madam Chair, we're trying to create a progressive system here. This is tremendously regressive. Because what you're doing is you're going to raise rental housing property taxes, which has the most regressive rate of all property taxes, -0.384, and you're going to raise that one, and you are going to reduce the most progressive factor in the whole works as far as the suits index, and that's the renter's refund, positive 0.916. So if you want to vote for great regressivity, and I know I've heard the other side talk about we want to become more progressive, but this is extremely, extremely regressive. The last thing I want to mention is, you know, we've lost 98,000 jobs in the last year, but not because of the corporate income tax rate. In fact, Minnesota's business taxes are very competitive. Minnesota ranks 41st in the ratio of taxes to total business profits, well below the national average. The Minnesota's corporate tax structure is competitive, particularly for businesses with significant sales outside the state. Unlike many states, Minnesota does not allow local governments to impose any type of tax on corporate activities. These are not my words. These are the words of the governor's Department of Employment and Economic Development, Positively Minnesota, taken off the website a few days ago. So, granted, we have a huge loss in jobs, but we've got the governor and we've got the state talking about our business taxes being very competitive, and I guess I would ask Representative Zellers, tell me what impact. I mean, we should have benchmarks. Anytime we're going to subsidize something, we should have benchmarks on what it's going to do. The property tax portion of this bill this year sets up benchmarks, so we know what we're getting for our dollars. Tell me what we're going to get for this, because it certainly doesn't seem, when we look at what we're trying to do for most Minnesota businesses, it looks pretty positive here. Now, we've got huge problems with our economy and huge problems with the job workforce and losing jobs. But it's not the corporate income tax. I would say it has to do with a lot of higher property taxes. Now, why isn't there a proposal to lower property taxes more? I'd love to see that. Members, I would vote no. I mean, there isn't anything good about this portion of the bill. All three parts are either protecting incumbents, you're making things more regressive, or you're doing something that I don't know if there's any data to show that we need to do.
Representative Hills from
Patton.
You're usually sitting over there.
Madam Chair, I'll tell you a little story that makes you feel any better. My daughter, every time she comes up here, when she comes to visit the Capitol, says, "Daddy, can we go see my Paul Cole today?" So actually, I think my little girl has a crush on Paul Cole. So it's all right. I think it's at least
the sweetest thing.
Yeah, and God's picture, I'm okay with it. Madam Chair and Representative Marquardt, if we want to get into a debate about campaign finance laws and public disclosure and what protects incumbents, that would be great, because I would love to have a lot more accountability in some of the contributions that the political parties are receiving. Large cash donations from certain organizations, having the ability to send out a large number of manual labor, feet on the ground, boots on the ground, that doesn't have to be accounted for, but as part of a membership in a certain organization, maybe say a union. I would love to have public disclosure on all kinds of campaign donations and incumbent protection, but if you ask the general public, and believe me, Madam Chair, there's a few of them out there that say, "You mean that I can give to a politician and the government gives me money back?" If you want to talk about incumbent protection, the PCR program would be the antithesis of incumbent protection. But I don't want to have a discussion about the campaign finance bill, because, again, even though germaneness is a theory here, not a hard-fought practice today, if you want to look at the regressivity of the bill, I'll quote my good friend Representative Rukavina, then don't vote for this bill. Taking away the gas tax credit for the low-income families that 2 years ago was absolutely pivotal and absolutely necessary to prevent regressivity, that's a gone in a wisp. So regressivity in this bill, I I beg to differ. I'll just end it at that, because I don't want to get into a debate about the PCR program and path bill. And, Representative, I will talk about the corporate rate, because the business owners that leave our state, and I'll be more than happy to forward you some of their comments. There's one on NPR, a business owner in the state of Minnesota. Up in your neck of the woods, Representative Markwell, we saw what I call a legacy Minnesota company go over the border. It happens all the time. Representative Lanning was here. I'm sure he'd give you half a dozen more examples. But then it's not just what's left, but it's what we're sending as a message. If the message is those folks, 68% or S-Corps, LLCs, LLPs, that file their business and personal income taxes together, going forward, this is what we're going to do. So they may not make their decision today, but if going forward they know this tax is going to be in place, they're going to make their 5-year plans based on that. Maybe their 10-year plan. And it may or may not happen, and we'll actually see it. They'll come in and say, yep, I'm mad, I'm leaving the state. A business owner in my district said, you'll never know. So the business, the building will be empty and we'll have moved. So sending a message, whether we like to think so or not, to our business owners, to our job providers in the state, when we do things like this. And whether or not you like the bill, I mean, that's fine, Representative Markwell. Don't like the bill. Don't like that you actually pay taxes on the rent paid, not just a percentage. That's fine. I mean, it's fair. I guess if you don't like it, that's fine. But then just vote the amendment down. But to say that governor's economic, website of economic development, whatever it is, Positively Minnesota, I'm talking about the job providers that have left. And whether or not you want to blame Governor Pawlenty, no offense, if you guys have been in charge for going on 3 years, I don't think the Senate has had Republican control for as long as I've been alive, but there's a two-party system here, and at least as long as I've been here, the Senate has controlled, and some would say probably a little bit more than they should, controlled the agenda. So, Representative Marquardt, I'm sure we can have this debate again on the House floor, but if you don't like the amendment, just vote it down.
Okay, I think we're going to have this debate for a while. Representative Dabney, Mallory Broad, David Stoney. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm actually warming to the idea of cutting the corporate tax rate. I think it may be a positive. I'm just not sure that making lower-income Minnesotans pay the corporate tax cut is the right way to do it. Yesterday, the nice folks in the realtors were good enough to pass out some of the tax incidence study. And if you look at it, what you see is the wealthier you are, the more you are impacted by the corporate franchise tax. That's a lot of that is investments. A lot of that is folks on the wealthier end there. If you look at it again and see the property tax refund, the poorer you are, the more reliant you are on the property tax refund program, whether it's the renter's credit or programs for homeowners. And what the Zeller's Amendment does is take $60 million out of the Minnesota economy each and every year. $60 million that gets spent. When the PCR check hits my household, it goes into the checking account, and it goes into groceries, or it goes into kids' clothes, or it goes into the mortgage payment, or it goes wherever, but it gets spent. It doesn't get ferreted away somewhere into investments and esoteric opportunities. It gets spent. And that's even more the case for folks who are receiving the renter's credit, who tend to be lower income and aren't going to sit on a $50, $100, $150 rent check or renter's refund check. They're going to go out and spend it. And they're going to prime the pump of the Minnesota economy. And Representative Zellers wants to take that economic activity out from underneath Main Street businesses and the families who are already going to be paying for the other elements of balancing this budget in terms of higher school fees, higher student-to-teacher ratios in their kids' schools, lower opportunities, higher property taxes. And Representative Zellers wants to take the rug out from under those folks and hand it to the top decile. I hope that my colleagues won't go there.
Representative Maury.
Madam Chair, I don't think this amendment really is worth any more time.
Captain Brad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Dabney, the corporate tax is a regressive tax. And so if you leave the money in the system in the first place and not funnel it through a government program, that money will be used and to good advantage in our communities and invested in our communities in a way that's positive. But my two comments related to the bill are related to effective spending. As we make tax decisions, one of the best things we can do is determine whether the programs we currently have in place are being used to the effect that they were intended. Madam Chair, I remember yesterday in your proposal, when you introduced your proposal, you teed it off with this piece of paper. One of thank you, Representative Lush, for the sidebar there. One of the things that you said in your reform provisions of it is that you're eliminating expenditures that are outdated or ineffective. And while I appreciate Representative Carlson's description of the PCR program being put in place due to Watergate, that was well before the advent of the 527. When you see what's going on in our elections in this state, if the goal, according to Representative Carlson, is to increase the role of the average citizen in the process, the PCR program is failing dramatically. All you have to do is look at the expenditures being made by 527, 5, 6, 7 times the expenditure by the candidates to know that the PCR program is just simply not working to do what it was intended to do. So if something's not working, we should evaluate it, alter it, and change it for today's environment. And that's what this proposal intends to do, is to get rid of a program that is ineffective and outdated, which is exactly, Madam Chair, what your reform provisions in your bill were intended to do. But the other thing I wanted to mention relates to the runner's credit. Again, effective spending, appropriate spending is what we're talking about as we make tough decisions. Let's look at this runner's credit. Representative Bellers isn't intending to cut $60 million out of the runner's credit. What he's intending to do is ensure that the runner's credit, which is credit for property taxes paid, is actually paid on property taxes paid, not as a percent of the rent paid. And so if we're thinking about how do we effectively accomplish the goals of a program, the goals of the renter's credit program is to diminish the cost of property taxes for renters. Well, why wouldn't we do that through the Zeller's language, which specifically aligns the payments we make to renters to the property taxes they pay? Right now, we're making payments to renters not based on the property taxes. We're making them based on their rent. Well, the rents vary throughout the entire state. Property taxes vary. But again, it's about aligning our spending to do what the programs are intending it to do. It's about effective use of dollars. It's not a cut. It's making sure that a program is used appropriately. And so I would actually recommend that members vote for these two provisions. We've got to start evaluating programs on their effectiveness. And we ought to be evaluating every single one of them. Madam Chair, you talked about zero-based budgeting. We're not zero-based budgeting off of the governor's budget. We're zero-based budgeting off of our expenditures. Let's expend our dollars wisely. These two programs are not fulfilling the mission that they were put in place to fulfill.
Thank you. Wilson David.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I have to comment on some of Representative Carlson's thoughts about the PCR fund. Back in the 70s, I mean, I've got an old polyester suit I could bring out here, too, but it's probably not going to look too good. It was brown plaid. It was gray. Tommy Boy. But that being said, I mean, in the perfect utopian world, the PCR fund is just the thing for fairness in elections. And, of course, we wouldn't want to get rid of it because it's an incumbent protection plan. Yeah, right. I'm the poster child for how that is so out of date, it's unbelievable. I mean, they spent $200,000 to get rid of me. And I was able to spend $31,400 to make sure that they didn't. Well, they did a couple of years ago. But to suggest that our campaign finance is fair in the state of Minnesota is probably the most absurd thing I've ever heard in my life. As far as protecting incumbents, it's just...
is just obscene, the way this system works now. We can spend $31,400. The 527 through those other groups can spend anything they want, and they do. And they do. I have seen it. So to say that it's more ethical the way we have it, and it was back in the 70s with the flower children, I guess they were actually back in the 60s, is just, in my mind, unconscionable to even make a comment such as that. When this system is so out of whack that groups can spend anything they want, this is a corrupt, unbalanced, unfair system the way it is. And then we have campaign finance board that can't read the law. We have a campaign finance board that, in my mind, is the most corrupt institution in this state. And so, please, when you're talking about the PCR, we need to get rid of it. It's not an incumbent protection plan, because if you're on a target list, you're going to have $200,000 behind you anyways. The $31,400 that you can spend is just a pittance, but let's just get rid of it.
Representative Downey. For the discussion, we're going to call for the vote. There's been a roll call. Representative Sellers.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll be brief. The idea, again, members, if you want to talk about fairness, and if you want to talk about, Representative Downey said we're balancing the budget on the backs of the poor. Well, so are you. Taking away some of the credits in here, raising the cigarette tax, raising the alcohol tax, taking away the credit for the low income people for the gas tax. So are you. In this case, at least I'm trying to say, because again, this isn't being passed through to a bunch of rich people. This is a corporate rate. We've heard in this committee how many different times they don't pay it. It's either passed through in the price of the products, or it costs the employees in a reduction of benefits that they're able to get, research and development, expansion, you name it. But they're not paying it. It's being passed through. So, members, the amendment, again, it's funny that now we're being chastised for balancing our amendments when before we would have been chastised if we didn't. But at least in this case, Madam Chair, and I think you've seen some of the other amendments, we're going to balance our amendments. Whether you like it or not, it doesn't matter, but they're balanced. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion? Okay, so Ms. Bergman, I'm going to call for the vote. Ms. Bergman will take the roll.
Montesky?
No.
Anderson?
Aye.
Broad?
Yes.
Carlson?
No.
Davis?
Yes.
Dabney?
No.
Bemmer?
Yes.
Bill?
No.
Beecher?
Yes.
Downey?
Yes.
Eastland?
Aye.
Gardner?
No.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Silkstrom?
No.
Coonan?
No.
Cole?
Yes.
Lanning? West?
No.
Liebling?
No.
Loeffler? Loeffler?
No.
Boone?
Aye.
Marquardt?
No.
Mallory?
Thanks.
Murphy?
No.
Reiner?
No.
Rukavina?
No.
Ruth?
Yes.
Goldberg?
No.
Silvery?
No.
Zeller?
Aye.
There being 12 ayes, 17 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Representative Rukavina. Representative Rukavina, are you ready for the A13?
I'll go for it, ma'am.
Okay, Representative Rukavina now moves H2323A13. Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, what this amendment does is it imposes a 2.5% surtax on all the income brackets, and it takes out of the bill the repeal of the lower income motor fuel credit. It takes out the alcoholic beverage taxes, the cigarette taxes, the tax on a private sale of a snowmobile ATV boat. It modifies the heating fuel exemption, fixes it back up, It puts money back into the pill payments in the environmental fund and environmental bill. And it reduces the forest, sustainable forest payments, or it actually pays them, puts the money back in for the sustainable forest and the tilt payments. And it is balanced. Members, I've heard a lot about regressivity. These are the most regressive. Representative Zellers, you mentioned the motor fuel credit a couple of times. You mentioned the cigarette tax. You mentioned the alcohol beverage tax. Members, this makes the bill very progressive, much more progressive than it is. You know, I just don't know what to say about what's going on in this nation and even in our state, and how we keep piling on the poor and middle-income folks. And the reason why we're in this mess, I still say, is the 2001 tax bill was never paid for. And I'm not the only one saying that. Representative Garofalo's good friend, Arnie Carlson, keeps saying that, too. And so, members, this is a way to be fair. You know, we keep hearing the word transparency, progressivity. This is progressive. You owe $1,000 in your Minnesota income taxes next year. Under this proposal, you'd pay $1,025. You'd pay $25 instead of all the little nickel and diming and dollaring that's going on in different parts of this bill. And I think it's a good amendment, and I'd appreciate your support on it.
Discussion. Discussion. Ruffendale, please.
Thank you, Carolyn Chesky and members. I'm supporting the Rukavina amendment. And, you know, I would prefer, frankly, that we have a straight-up surcharge on the existing rates. I think I said in this committee I wasn't particularly interested in paying more than 7.85% plus the surcharge to get this problem behind us. But when I look at things in the bill regarding to the state paying its own real estate taxes, there's nobody in this room, and this is regarding PILT, payment in lieu of taxes, there's nobody in this room that I'm aware of that can not pay their real estate taxes and not have consequences that occur to them. For example, penalty and interest and ultimately tax forfeiture, except the state. And the state owns north of 5 million acres of land, which is predominantly located in the Northeast and predominantly located in legislative districts like myself, and Representative Solberg, Representative Rukavina, Representative Van Zelf. Millions and millions of acres, but yet because the state hasn't been able to come up with a plan to keep revenues in line with expenditures in cooperation or in conjunction with cutting, we're going to just arbitrarily set a figure of paying only 80% of our real estate taxes, but yet the counties and the school districts and the local units of government have no way to recoup that except to raise property taxes on the other people that are still existing. And then, secondly, in the bill, reduces the Sustainable Forest Initiative Act. Now, to be honest with you, we really would be incentive. We really would come out on the good end of this thing, because if those huge landowners that own hundreds of thousands of acres in the northern part of the state don't get these payments, they're likely to sell off that land, or at least a significant portion, and we'll have a bigger property tax base. Because people will build cabins and on 40 acres or 20 acres, however the landowners decide to sell it off. And these are landowners, members, that have 300,000 plus acres. And what we're paying for is to keep them from doing exactly what I described. And it's very interesting that the voters last November voted to increase the statewide sales tax to do exactly that, is to buy more public land. In fact, $68 million is proposed to be bought in terms of purchases and easements in the legacy amendment, the Lessard Outdoor Heritage Amendment. But yet we're doing exactly the opposite by cutting the things that keep the land base intact in the Sustainable Forest Initiative Act. Some people say we're protecting the big companies that own those lands. Those companies aren't even in Minnesota anymore. Forest Capital, for example, is in Boston, Massachusetts. What we're protecting are the people that you represent, because those people, those lands in that act are basically quasi-public lands. They're owned by an investor group, and in the deal that they made to get these payments, they have to allow public access. And when your members from Representative David's district or Representative Hillstrom's district go up north to go deer hunting or partridge hunting or cross-country skiing or snowmobiling, they're going across thousands and thousands of acres of these lands that are kept in quasi-public ownership because of these payments. And then that's as far as I'm going to go. I just support the amendment. Those two things in particular are really difficult for us to deal with, and I just can't believe that the state would again propose to not pay their own real estate taxes. If that's the way it's going to be, then we need to start selling public land, and I know there's no support for that either. So I know that times are tough, but maybe what we need is an amendment to this bill that would require or allow the county to start tax forfeiture processes and penalty and interest against the state for not paying their real estate taxes. Because these counties depend on these payments, and if we don't pay them, the local property taxes will go up. It's already happening. And that's my pitch on that. There are other things that I support in this amendment, but those are the two primary big ticket items.
Thank you, Representative Downing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of clarifying questions for perhaps Representative Solberg and Representative Rukavina. Representative Solberg, or I guess Representative Carlson, what is the right now forecasted general fund balance at the close of fiscal year 2011? Are we projecting it? Are we kind of budgeting and managing towards the $700 million number?
Representative Solberg, looks like you got your file cabinet out there first. You got the Rukavina method of filing okay.
And sure, I think it's
over.
17 on the bottom line.
$17 or
$17 million?
Thousand?
Let me just
okay. Take a second and get it right. And Rep. Sam Carl's got, you know, and it is, you know, Rep. Sam Downey while they're looking, it is moving around. I'll just tell Representative Gill while we're waiting for them to look that I mentioned earlier there's an issue with the filter to that may end up getting changed because the environment finance people put some tax items in the environment finance bill and I asked them to take it out. So that still is not yet resolved on the spreadsheet. So hopefully we're going to know that by the end of the day. So that's not related, you know, with the amendment really, but I just want you to know that. Yes, please.
I know in the environment spreadsheet, environment finance spreadsheet, we're carrying the reduction. But we don't have the language in the bill. Is that what you're talking about? And now the language for the reduction is in this bill?
Right, but I think there's some issues that we haven't quite figured out with staff, so I'm going to try to work on that as the day goes on, so we may be able to address some of the silt yet. But that's really separate. I just wanted you to know that because I mentioned it. So we're going to have Representative Downey, you want to hear your next question while they confer?
Sure.
It's a big budget. They have to be accurate.
I appreciate that.
Oh, here we go. Rep. Tim Solberg.
Within a few hundred thousand. Is that okay? I think it's 17 on the bottom line.
17 million. So we're 683 million, at least forecasted right now, short of having any chance of hitting the $700 million blink off number. And if I read this right, and this may just be a technical wording change, but if I read this right, we will at one moment, one instant in time, October 1st, 2011, we'll take a look at our general fund balance at the end of the 2011 fiscal year. We'll look back and we'll look at it, and if it's not above $700 million, then this tax surcharge continues on in the next year. But then there's no provision to actually take a look at it again 12 months later. So if our general fund balance isn't above $700 million on October 1, 2011, this surtax just goes on forever. And I may be misreading the bill, or we just may need a technical clarification, but I don't support the bill anyway. I think we need to move less from corporate and personal income taxes over to a consumption tax strategy. more in line with the 21st Century Tax Reform Commission. So I don't know that I'm not going to vote for this thing, even if we fix this. But I think that's a major loophole, that this blink on, blink off is never going to blink off. As far as I can tell, there's no reasonable prospect for it ever blinking off, and this will be a surtax that goes on in perpetuity. So maybe it's a question for Representative Rupi.
Representative Downey, this was drafted after the fashioned after the Cui surtax that was agreed upon in 1982, I believe it was. And yes, it requires a 2% of the general fund be having that much of a surplus, which is about $700 million. Once that's reached, it blinks off, and I believe that is the way in this mantle that it's written. At least it was supposed to be written that way. And so once that $700 million is in the rainy day fund or a surplus, then the tax, the surtax, would blink off automatically.
Thank you.
Yes, sometimes
I could be reading lines 1.10 to 1.17 incorrectly. Maybe there's a clarification from staff on that, but it appears to me that there's a one moment in time review of the general fund balance, and if at that moment in time it's not $700 million, then the surtax continues and there's no provision in the bill to look back at it either on an ongoing monthly or even annual basis to have it blink off.
Maybe Ms. Mance, the Chancellor, could come up and clarify that, because my intention was that once that $700 million is there, that it blinks off.
Ms. Mance. Madam Chair, members of the committee, and Mr. Michael may be able to help me with this, because I think he may have been here at the time. In the 1982 surtax, the language provided for, as Representative Downey describes, a one-time look back at what the general fund balance would be at the close of the next biennium. The presumption was that the legislature, if that balance was not reached, would then move this blink off forward, rather than having section after section here that said, okay, now you have to look again, and you have to look again each time to see what it is. I think in what happened was that the blink off was never triggered, because the surtax, after it being increased, I believe, twice, was then removed by the legislature before the blink off could be triggered. So when I drafted this for Representative Rukavina, I went back to the 1982 law and put in the blink off language that was in place there, which provided for the surtax to go away if there were a big increase, unexpected increase in general fund revenues before the law would be revisited. And then, of course, the legislature would be back annually to look at that and review it. I increased the years in it, and then I increased the dollar amount to approximately equal 2% of the unrestricted general fund balance, which is what the dollar amount trigger was in the 1982 law.
Madam Chair, just a final comment, I guess. In the big picture, we obviously have a huge budget challenge, and frankly, we're being let off the hook a little bit with the stimulus funds coming through the state. And I know we're all doing our best to try and reform on the expenditure side and the cost of government and the functions of government as best we can. But it does seem to me that if the argument being made behind this amendment, and again, I don't support the amendment and I'm not going to support the bill either, is that we need to blink on some income taxes to try and get through this two-year period. The way I read this, I don't see this thing ever blinking off. And I don't see us making the moves kind of more globally in terms of what we're doing in state and local government to reduce the cost of government. I see these things just going in perpetuity, that all these things that in theory are one-time measures are going to be ongoing measures, and we are signing up for an unbelievably huge ongoing tax increase here as compared to one-time measures that buy us time to reform and reduce the cost of government. Thank you.
Representative Garofalo, Representative Coles, Representative Demmer, Representative Rukavina.
No, I'll wait.
Okay, Representative.
I got to hear what they got.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rukavina, one point I do want to agree with you on is I do agree with you on the 2001 assessment, that when we promise things, whether it's on the expenditure or revenue side, and we don't come up with a way to pay for it, That is a big problem that we have. But Madam Chair, I don't like having amendments like this because if I vote for this amendment, then I will be accused of supporting the income tax surcharge, which I don't support. But if I vote against this amendment, then I'm accused of supporting some of the revenue raisers that are in this bill that I don't support. So Madam Chair, what I would like to do is I'd like to divide the amendment between 1.19 and 1.20. And I believe it's divisible at that point, but I think that's a ruling you can make. And Madam Chair, I would request that we vote on the first section of the amendment first.
Okay, so Representative Groff will move to divide the amendment between lines 1.19 and 1.20 and request the vote on the first half of the divided amendment. Representative Sabina.
Well, Madam Chair, first of all, you know, I never drafted this to try to catch you on anything because you're going to get elected no matter what because everybody likes you so much. But in your district,
Mr. Fair.
But Representative Groppa, what you're doing here is doing exactly what you know. You just said that we did in 2001. Your amendment basically then removes everything and doesn't allow us to raise the revenue to pay for what's in the bill. So. You know, I don't know what purpose it serves then other than you're using my amendment to remove all of the sin taxes, et cetera, and the ones I don't like because you don't like them either. But I don't know if you can divide this amendment because then it puts the bill out of balance. So it's a determination made by the chair on that.
Well, and Representative Rucolino, we're just now thinking about that because we can handle it by just voting it down because it does put it out of balance. You know,
well, man,
I'll take advice on that, Representative Fulbert.
Well, my advice is that it's not divisible because I think you can't have one part and then another part as well. Don't get excited.
We're going to help you.
I know I need help.
Madam Chair, just to that point.
Okay, so then we have a list here, Representative Groffel.
First of all, Madam Chair, the point of the bill being out of balance, that doesn't happen until we vote on the first section of the bill. If the first section passes, we've actually got a larger negative number, so the bill would actually be more in balance and actually would take care of your guys' payroll problem. And I don't, Madam Chair, I don't think we vote on whether something's divisible or not. The point that this is out of balance, it's only out of balance if the first motion fails.
I think Representative Groffel, you're right. I think the first half, it is divisible, and the first half raises money.
Right.
So it's okay. So, members, I think we're going to vote on the first half. Discussion.
Go ahead,
sir. Well, if you want to get back in on that, I mean, I'm intending to call this divisible, and we're going to vote on the first half. So if you want to go back and argue whether I should call it divisible, I just did. So let's just save all that time. Okay, so now, on to the first half. Discussion to the first half of the amendment, which is the temporary surtax. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I have to go back to some comments made by Representative Downey regarding the blink-off portion of this surcharge. You know, we're set up with the shift in education finance and with the tails that we have on Article 9 in the education finance bill. We're set up for between $3 and $4 billion worth, that's with a B, $1 billion worth of shortfall starting in the old 13 biennium. And that's just to get us to even with paying back the shift and covering the expenditures that are set up in the tails of that particular bill. I think the idea that we're going to be in a position to blink this off in a couple of years or even a couple of bienniums is just simply ludicrous. It's ridiculous. When we're looking at a tails on education bill, and it probably won't pass anyway because we know that's not doable, but there's absolutely no way that this is a surtax that's temporary. This would be like the temporary sales tax that was enacted a number of years ago that is now embedded onto our 6.5%, 6% the sales tax rate. So, Madam Chair, unless we want to call it what it is and just say we're increasing everybody's income tax by 2.5%, this doesn't make any sense to vote for this.
Okay. For the discussion on the first half of
Okay. Representative Anderson, I have no one on the list, because what we did is just dropped everyone on that debate. So if you're back on the surtax, raise your hand. Representative Anderson.
Well, Madam Chair, first I'd like to ask for a roll call on this first half of the divided amendment. I mean, Madam Chair, I don't want to belabor it, but, you know, I agree with my colleagues here, Demmer and Downey and Garofalo. This is not going to be temporary. This is just going to add to the tax burden. So not only will we have a permanent surtax on our income, but we'll also have an increase in the sales tax up to 7% and a whole host of other tax increases. And I would argue that this is not the right approach if we're going to try and get some job growth here in the state of Minnesota.
For the discussion, welcome, Paul.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, let's be clear. I mean, this is going to apply to 100% of income taxpayers. We're going to tax their taxes. Representative Rucavina, you're taxing their taxes. And it's only temporary, as Representative Downey explained, if on the only condition that it's temporary is if on October 1st, 2011, there's more than $700 million in the general fund balance. Otherwise, like Representative Demmer said, this thing's not going away, members. Just like, you know, Representative Rucavina and others, you like to go back in time. So let's go back in time to that temporary sales tax, the Arnie Carlson sales tax, as it's affectionately referred to, that temporary sales tax that moved us from 6 to 6.5. Members, that I don't know how we can call a sales tax that was put in place under Arnie Carlson's administration temporary. It's permanent. It's here. It's around to stay. And if we increase taxes on people's taxes under this scenario, the way this is drafted, Representative Rucavina, it's not going away. So we're going to tax everybody's taxes, and we're going to do it in perpetuity. Members, please vote no.
Representative Rucavina, and we're going to call for the vote.
Well,
Representative Rucavina.
You know, members, I've been up since 2:30 this morning, tossing and turning. You know, I told the chair I'd sleep on this bill. I didn't sleep very well. You know, everybody watching us debate here today, Representative Cole, will agree with me on one thing. We tax taxes all the time. You pay your income tax, and then after you pay your income tax, or before you pay your income tax, you pay your Social Security tax, and then you pay your income tax to the federal and the state. And then you pay your property taxes to the local unit of government, and in some cases now, if you own a cabin, to the state. And then you pay a sales tax on a lot of things that you buy after you paid your tax, so that's a tax on your tax. And then you pay little taxes like cigarette taxes, which is a tax on a tax. And then you pay alcohol taxes, which is a tax on the tax. You pay on your phone bill, which is a tax on the tax. So, you know, I don't buy that argument. Representative Downey, you benefited considerably, probably one of the most in the state, with the 2001 tax bill, giving Edina for the first time in the history of the Minnesota Miracle, in the history of state funding for school districts, general fund dollars. You never got a penny before then. Edina alone, if I'm not mistaken, got over $100 million a year of money that they didn't, or maybe there were three school districts, excuse me. It was the three E's, the Garden of Eden, Eden Prairie, Edina, and Egan, I believe. The Fertile Crescent got about $100 million a year of the approximately $1 billion for the school takeover, or the $800 million, because included in there was your transit levy takeover, which we took over for the metropolitan area too, which you formerly paid on your property taxes. The fact of the matter is that taxes in this country and this state have gotten more regressive, that the middle class and the lower middle class and the poorest of the poor are being asked to pay more and more, and the wealthiest are being asked to pay less and less. I'm not going to debate Representative Garofalo about whether the wealthy pay more in general. But I know since Ronald Reagan's time, when I served on the township board, that we lost our revenue sharing and we had to pick it up in property taxes. You know, I just don't know what to do anymore. I'm an old farmer laborite,
you know, and I don't apologize for my belief, and I don't apologize for basing taxes on the ability to pay. And this is fair, and it's simple, and it's understandable to the public. And I don't do polls. I do Croatians, but I don't do polls, you know. But what I do know is this. I know the people in my district. People in my district still believe. That didn't really come out right there. I know the people in my district still believe in fair taxes. And what's been going on in this country and state isn't fair. I do not mind paying and helping Edina pay to buy down their school district taxes. But I didn't like the fact that my taxes got raised. You know, in the year when that first went in, everybody's taxes is going to be cut. I remember when Representative Swigum came down from the speaker's podium to be on the news to talk about that great bill and how everybody was going to see 96% of the local taxing jurisdictions in my legislative district, their taxes went up the next year. So, during a recession or a depression or whatever we're in, because of greed and this mess that we're in this world and country, people still make big money. And there's a lot of people making big money yet. And all I'm asking is proportionally that they pay the same amount. I didn't even do any graduated tax in this. All I did was say, everybody that earns income is going to pay. It strikes me as somewhat insincere that when we had a surplus, when the Republicans took control of the House, that they wanted to distribute the surplus back based on your income taxes. But they don't want to tax people based on income taxes. When it comes to giving a rebate, they want to give it back based on income taxes, which at the time would have eliminated 450,000 of the poorest people in the state, mostly senior citizens, from getting a rebate in the Ventura years. So, members, do what you want. You know, I couldn't sleep at night because of what's going on in this bill. I know that the chair is trying to be fair and being progressive, and that is, there is progressivity in this bill when it comes to the taxing the richest of the rich. But there's a lot of regressivity. That's the part I'm trying to get rid of. I was the one that insisted on to override the governor's veto and get all the Democrats that we gave that low-income rebate on the motor fuel, on the gas tax. And now I see it disappearing. You know, I was, I'll just be quiet. Members, I'd appreciate your support. I'm still a Democratic farmer laborite. I still believe in fair taxes, and I believe in honest taxes. And we haven't been very honest around here because the governor calls the cigarette tax a C, and property taxes have escalated to the point where some of them have doubled in local jurisdictions since the no new tax pledge. So I'm just trying to be honest and fair, and let's vote.
Okay, we're going to, Ms. Bergman, we're going to call for the vote. Ms. Bergman will call the roll.
Montesquieu?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Broad?
No.
Carlson?
No.
Davis?
No.
Dabney?
No.
Zimmer?
No.
Phil?
Yes.
Dietrich?
No.
Downey?
No.
Eastland?
No.
Gardner?
No.
Garofalo?
No.
Hilstrom?
No.
Coonan?
Yes.
Holt?
No.
Lanning? Left?
Yes.
Liebling?
No.
Lockler?
No.
Boone?
No.
Marquardt?
No.
Mallory?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Reiner?
Yes.
Rukavina?
Yes.
Rude?
No.
Colbert?
Yes.
Silberry?
No.
Zeller?
Sorry, buddy. No. Rukavina really knows how to bring people together. Yeah.
There being 6 ayes and 23 nays, the amendment is now adopted. Who's got an amendment next? And you know, while we're looking, second half. Okay, so the second half now, members, I do not believe works anymore unless we have the revenue to raise it. Representative Carlson?
Yes.
Madam Chair, that's correct with me on the board.
So members, Representative Garofalo, I'm going to rule the second half of the amendment out of order.
My amendment.
Oh, who said it? Oh, Representative Rucavina.
It was your division.
It was your division.
He should get credit for the first half.
Yeah. Okay, so further amendments. Okay, so Representative Coles has one and Representative Jill. And while we're waiting for that, you know, members, if the pages could pass out Representative Coles' amendment and Representative Jill's, I think that'd be helpful so we can go right away and do the next one. But I just want to say to Representative Rucavina in particular and to the public, you know, for those who think that people just love to raise taxes, it should be apparent to people that the majority caucus is struggling. People are trying to do the right thing here. And it's hard to know. It is just really hard to know what is the right blend of cuts and taxes and shifts and on whom is going to get us out of this international, national, and state recession. It's hard. So I personally just want to thank Representative Rucavina because everyone knows he's a populist and his heart and his passion is with Minnesotans. And this is tough for all members. And I think sometimes people feel like it's just that raising taxes is something people love to do, and they forget that, you know, this caucus is going to cut more than the governor, and this caucus is cutting more than it's raising. And I just want to highlight the difficulties involved in this process. Representative Polk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe the genesis of this language is from Representative Lanning's initial bill. We heard testimony yesterday from the cities, from the counties. We've heard discussion about the post-employment benefit issue and the various ways in which counties and cities are seeking to pay for that requirement. And one of the things that we heard, I think, very clearly is that one of the biggest driving factors for this issue is the fact that we have a mandate in place that our local units of government provide this post-employment health care. Madam Chair, I recognize that this is not directly a tax issue, but it's absolutely related to all of the to the Biscuits bill, to all the other things that we've discussed here. It's certainly related to county levies and how we counties and cities are required to pay for their post-employment benefits. And so, Madam Chair, that's the amendment. It essentially would do what I know my Democrat farmer laborite friends like, which is have issues settled between management and labor at the bargaining table, which is where they should be. It would certainly allow for cities and counties to continue to offer those benefits if, in fact, that's what they agreed to do with their with the labor bargaining units. And so, Madam Speaker, I'm hoping that based on Representative Rucavina's impassioned plea that my friends on the other side of the aisle remember their labor roots, that we can do that and leave this at the bargaining table. Let's provide the tool for our counties and cities to negotiate. And I'm absolutely certain that the bargaining units, the public employee groups in many cities and many counties are going to want to see this benefit continue, and they're going to negotiate hard for it, and I suspect that many of them will succeed. And I suspect that some cities and counties are going to want to continue to offer these benefits. And so this really is an issue that should be left at the bargaining table. Let's not make it mandatory like it is today. Let's make it optional. Members, I'd urge your support, and I would like a roll call on this, Madam.
Okay, so Representative Coles now moves the H2323A15 amendment, and Representative Coles has requested a roll call. Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Coles, if you would just hit that last point for me again as I'm quickly reading through the amendment. I don't see language that says you shall one way or another. It says you may or may not, correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Reiner, if you look on page 1, line 14, the language being stricken is the mandatory language. You must pool. You must offer it. So this is going from the mandatory requirement to an optional requirement.
For the discussion, Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair, it doesn't say you must offer. All it says is if you offer, you must pool.
Okay, so
Representative Coles, if you want to respond, otherwise Representative Mullery. Representative Coles.
Madam Chair, it takes away the mandate. It clearly does that. That's what the language. That's what the language says. Representative Stolberg, maybe help me out a little bit because
Madam Chair, it doesn't mandate that every local unit of the government offer that health insurance for their retirees. They're all over the board on that. What it says is, if that isn't offered, then the retirees and the actives are in one big pool.
Madam Chair, Representative Stolberg, if you look on line 1.4, the language in current law reads, a local unit of government must allow a former employee and the employee's dependents to continue to participate indefinitely in the employer-sponsored medical dental group insurance program. If you go down to line 1.14, what we're saying here is that you're not required to pool those employees in the same group as the current employees. So in effect, Representative Solberg, what we're doing is we are allowing cities and counties to negotiate and have separate pools. They can have a retiree pool, they can have the existing pool, and this is exactly what the cities and counties are asking for in terms of the additional, to use the overused cliche or metaphor, another tool in the toolbox. And again, it's not mandatory. Right now, it's mandatory, and this would make it optional. And so, let's let that issue happen and be decided at the bargaining table between labor and management.
Madam Chair,
please wrap them over.
I have a little bit of knowledge of this since I was a plaintiff in a lawsuit that was just settled by the appellate court a little bit ago. And I also I won.
Okay.
And there are local units of government all over, both when I say municipalities, school districts, and everything else, that some of them offer retirement and some of them do not offer retirement health care benefits. That's done at the bargaining table. The law says that if there are offers, then they must be pooled. So what you're saying is that you would take two separate pools, one retirees and one active, and you would probably then have a, depending upon if you wanted to do that, you may increase your rate for some. But I know very well that not every unit of government offers retiree health care.
Okay, Representative Mullery.
I've got some foreclosure and zoning that have much more direct relation to taxes than this. Are we open for those then too? Because I have some time, I can go and get them ready for
Yes, members, you know, I'd like to gently remind members with limited time, it's nice to have amendments be tax amendments. This isn't. This committee in the past has usually accepted kind of anything goes and but tried to kind of talk people down so that we don't spend the rest of the day doing that. This one's been offered. I'll leave it to Representative Coles to decide if he'd like to withdraw it, but I would urge members to vote no. This really is not the committee to be making that decision. And I would strongly urge a no vote, but I will allow it to go on if Representative Coles would like to take the vote. Representative Mullery Moore, or else we'll go to Garofalo. Okay, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And briefly, 2 points. One, I think this is similar, if not the exact same language, that came out of Representative Lanning's working group, which is in the property tax subdivision. So it would seem that this is the appropriate committee for it to be in. If I'm mistaken, someone can correct
me. I'm allowing the vote.
Okay, thank you. And then the second point is, Madam Chair, members, is that this is, right now, the current law is a mandate for the implicit rate subsidy. That is what the mandate is right now. And because of the changes in GASB, we have this huge liability that's getting talked onto our books. When this was created, I'm sure it was the best of intentions, but it just has unintended consequences. And I think I would strongly support the Coles motion, and I hope members would join me in support of it.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to appreciate your willingness to hear this. This is specific to testimony that occurred in this committee by Mr. Carlson. Thank you.
That's time my part. We're going to call for the vote.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And, yeah, this was initially part of Representative Lanning's working group. And in the local government committee, it was taken out. And I was there for that testimony. And this is an issue, as I also carried that school bill on other post-employment benefits. There's several issues on all of this, and this is one of the issues. At the testimony that's heard is, it's complex. You know, both sides are working on this. In fact, I've been working kind of with both sides on this, and there's not peace in the valley yet. And so, members, I would ask that you vote no. I think this is something that's going to occur in the interim. I mean, this is an issue that's been identified, but one of the concerns is where do the retirees may go in this situation on some of this. So, Representative Coles, this is a concern. I mean, this was identified, and you've heard the testimony, but there has not been a conclusion on how to really deal with this where both sides would be agreeable. And so I would ask that we vote no today on this.
Madam Chair, just one very brief comment. Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, thank you. I hope that since there's not peace in the valley on the whole tax bill, that you'll be voting no and urging members to do so as well. Madam Chair, I think we're ready to vote.
Okay, let's send Abby, and then we'll call for the vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do share my colleague from Minneapolis' concerns about non-tax issues being raised in this committee without a hearing, without a policy discussion. This is a significant policy. Excuse me. This is a significant policy change. It may even be the right policy change. Except earlier, Representative Garofalo agreed with Representative Rukavina. It's kind of a fun day when that happens. That when we've made promises, we should fulfill those promises. And we made promises to employees that when they retired, they could continue to purchase insurance through their previous employer in the employee pool. And the Coles Amendment undoes that promise and says, you know, you retired and we told you what the rules of the game were going to be, but you know what? We're going to change the rules of the game on you. After you've retired, now that you're on a fixed income, now that you don't have options available to you to increase your income or work it out with the higher expenses. And it may be, Representative Coles, the right direction to go in the future, in a different conversation, but I think once we've made a promise, we should fulfill our promise.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Representative Dabney, I agree with you that we should be keeping the commitments we've made. And Madam Chair, I have a very brief oral amendment I'd like to incorporate into this. I think it's pretty simple. It's on line 2.24. I'd like the effective date to read, this section is effective for individuals who retire after July 1, 2009. And I'd like to incorporate that, Madam Chair. After effective,
okay,
insert
Coles,
individuals who retire after.
Representative Coles on line 2.24 moves after the word effective for individuals who retire after. Is that correct, Representative Coles?
Yes.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
And so we're on the roll call.
Madam Chair, you know, nice try, Representative Coles, but teachers who have already had to inform their school districts previous to April 1st if they were going to retire, so they've already made their choices, and you're again changing the rules of the game after they've made the decision.
Representative Rukavina.
Well, Madam Chair, you know, I just don't want to see us taking something, another thing away from working people. And Representative Coles, you know, if you look online, 1.25, the former employer must pay the entire premium for continuation of the coverage. I don't see what the issue is here. And it's also, if you keep reading there, except as otherwise provided in a collective bargaining agreement, which you were concerned about collective bargaining, I would think that this is a big enough policy issue that it should be reviewed in both the Labor Management Committee and in my policy committee. So I would hope a no vote would be in order.
Thank you. Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I think Representative Lucavino spoke well to the policy implications. I sort of with you, Representative Coles, and how you incorporated that last change, because for us in the Northland, the issue isn't ongoing retirees, it's existing retirees. You know, we've gone through the difficult process of renegotiating all our active contracts to address these issues. But I think your amendment, the change in the conversation, reflects the complexity of this issue, which is probably the best argument for it needing to go through a policy vetting.
Okay, Ms. Bergman will call the roll.
Lentesi?
No.
Anderson?
Aye.
Broad?
Yes.
Carlson?
No.
Davis?
Yes.
Dabney?
No.
Stemmer?
Yes.
Still?
Nope.
Kiefer?
No.
Downey?
Yes.
Eastman?
Aye.
Gardner?
No.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Hilstrom?
No.
Coonan?
No.
Cole?
Yes.
Lanning? Lesch?
No.
Liebling?
No.
Lockler?
No.
Loon?
Yes.
Marquardt?
No.
Mallory?
Yes.
Murphy?
No.
Oh. Reiner?
No.
Rukavina?
No.
Ruth?
No.
Silver?
No.
Silveri?
No.
Zeller?
Aye.
With 10 ayes and 19 nays, the Coles Amendment is not adopted. Further amendments, Representative Dill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the KN-A10 Amendment.
Representative Dill moved the KN-A10 Amendment. Representative Dill.
This has to do, members, with some Iron Range Resources business that we carried last year in this bill. In the tax bill, regarding a loan provision for a renewal for a biomass energy facility that'll be located in the Taconite Relief Area, and what it does in essence is it changes on line 2.23 for the cost of construction. You're striking out construction and putting providing for. That has to do with the fact that there are many other things that are eligible that we want to be eligible for this project rather than just the specific construction. And it also extends the timeout 1 year from July 1, 2009 to July 1, 2010. And that has to do with the site that was originally picked for this facility was found to have enough environmental remediation required that they had to look for another site. It just delayed the project as well as the environment, the business environment. Now, you know, with the recession has caused them to slow down a bit. It's back on track now, but we need to extend the date. This has no fiscal impact on any of the state's funds, has no additional impact on the Iron Range Resources Fund. The money has already been appropriated at the IRRRB, and the grantee has been identified, and they're in the process of signing, the loan. The loanee, the company borrowing the money, has been identified, and they're in the process of doing the agreement at this time. So it extends the date and makes it a slightly more broadly written in terms of what is eligible.
Okay, so thank you, Representative Rukavina. You're okay with this one? Or yeah, Representative. We want to hear from the Rangers so we know what's.
It makes no difference to me.
Okay. Others, Representative Fulbert. Okay, so questions, members? It's just easier to get their views out quick before we start the discussion. Thank you. We have Representative Demmer, Anderson Cole. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bill, refresh my memory, first of all, who is the loan actually going to, is my first question. And then my second question is, changing from construction to providing for, could you be a little more specific as to what you have in mind there for what else they would be able to use this money for? First, who's the money going to, and then by expanding it, what specifically do you have in mind for them to use it for?
Madam Chair and Representative Dammer, firstly, the money is going to no one at this point because the loan agreement has not been signed at this point, and that is another reason why we're extending the date. However, the company that is front and center and has applied for the loan is Renewal Fuel, which is Renewal Fuel Incorporated, which is the majority of that company is owned by Cleveland Cliff, which is a mining company, as you know, a worldwide mining company with significant facilities on the Iron Range. And secondly, as you know, whenever you establish something like this, you have land acquisition, you have site remediation, you have site development, you have water, possibly water, sewer, and infrastructure components, as well as just the physical construction of the building. Just pollution equipment, all types of different facets that need to be put together as a package. Now, the package is estimated to be at about $20 million, and the companies are providing, you know, the vast majority of the private capital to do the implementation of the project. And again, this is a loan that will be paid back to the Iron Range Resources with interest.
Okay, Representative Sarah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick follow then. Well, I'm just reading through the rest of the language. I know you're not changing any of it, but by expanding that and taking it away from just the construction, all the other things you're talking about, is there a requirement for the company to pay for anything, for any private capital? If you say providing for, that could include anything and everything to do with the project. I'm not seeing anything to limit 100% loan to cover every single aspect of this.
Madam Chair,
maybe I'm missing something, but...
Yes, please, that's Tom Dell.
The loan is capped, but in the original, if you look in the bill, as I haven't even opened it, but it had 10 cents per taxable ton, which limited the loan to the maximum amount available through the agency to about $3.95 million, as I recall. So it's capped that way because there's only so many tons of taconite production and only so many cents dedicated to this. So it's self-limiting in that regard. And as I said, the project is nearly a $20 million, if not a $20 million project. And because of the first cents per ton and the limited number of tons, it makes it self-limiting.
Thank you.
Hey, Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Yell, help me. Did we hear this in the Higher Ed and Workforce Development Committee at all?
This bill, no, we did not, and this bill passed last year, and the amendment that we're making is just, as you know, the extension of the time so that the company can go ahead and get the loan document signed. You know, the end of the year is coming up rather quickly, and they just now got an option on a site, and so that's the reason that we're extending the time. They just recently, in the last month, have taken an option on a specific site. And the original site, as I said, had considerable environmental remediation, so they've abandoned that, and that delayed the whole project.
Okay, Madam Chair, Representative Gill, what kind of safeguards do we have that require them to pay this money back to the IRRB?
Yes. Madam Chair, the IRRB is, frankly, much of its entire existence is relative to loans to businesses on the Iron Range, and the safeguards will be provided for in the document that are executed between the company and the Iron Range Resources staff and board and with the governor's approval.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Coles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dabney, I hope that since this wasn't heard in the policy committee this year that you're going to continue to be consistent, and since it's really not directly a tax thing, it sort of is but isn't, that you're going to oppose the Dill amendment here, just to be consistent with the arguments you made with regard to my amendment. But I want to let you know, Representative Dill, I share a couple of the general concerns that have been raised by Representative Demmer and Representative Anderson, but I want to make sure that I'm helping my friends from the Iron Range out a little bit here, and I'm going to support your amendment, and I think we should put this one on. The only question I have, Representative Dill, and for staff, and I know that this can be cleaned up if it does go on. I'm just not sure if the language on page 3, because I think he pulled this out from something last year, says if 2008 House File 1812 is enacted. I think we probably know the answer to that question already, but I think we can clean that up if we need to, Representative Dill, but I'll be supporting your amendment.
And Madam Chair, actually I'm okay if Representative Dabney votes against this amendment, as long as the rest of you vote for it.
Thank you, David.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. You asked Ruka Vina if he's signed off on it, Solberg if he's signed off on it. I just want you to know that I've signed off on it.
Further discussion, we're going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay?
No.
The amendment carries. Okay, so we've got a Coonan amendment, a Tilbury amendment. These can all get passed out. We have a Gardner, Tilbury, and Coonan that I know of, and then any others. That's all I know of. I'm sorry, do you have an amendment passed out already? From Demmer, please, yes. Okay, so we're going to first go to the Demmer amendment, but let's get some of these passed out, too. So, thank you. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I have the A-12. I'd like to move the A-12 amendment, Madam Chair. I just I gave it to the page and just asked him to pass it out to keep things going, Madam Chair. I hope that's okay.
Okay, Representative Demmer now moves the H-2323-A-12 amendment. Okay, Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, this is a amendment that basically reinstates the job fee benefits for state income tax as well as for corporate franchise tax that are taken out in House File 2323. Madam Chair, going back to some comments. Oh, by the way, it's paid for again by the rent credit, the change of the rent credit back to, and we've had that discussion, Madam Chair. I guess we can truncate maybe that discussion since we've had that. But basically, using the change in the rent credit from a percentage of rent paid to an amount attributable to the actual rent paid. And that's how I pay for this. In fact, there's extra money there, so we can use that toward the tails. But Madam Chair, back to the benefits for Job Z. Similar discussion was held, and I'm going to go back to some comments Representative Dabney made. And over the years, I find myself agreeing, not always, but more and more with some of the conceptual comments that Representative Dabney makes, primarily in keeping promises that we've made. We have a contract with these companies that sign Job Z development agreements for these benefits. And Madam Chair, with all due respect, I think to go back and change that, it has to do with breaking promises made by state to encourage not just people to invest their own money, but to encourage the lending community to lend for projects that are Job Z. This puts back in place basically those commitments that were made with those. Going forward, if we want to make changes, that's fine, because people going into their projects know. But to retroactively change in the middle of the stream, change these benefits, it's just not good policy. It's not good. It's not honest. That's another comment that was made about honesty, and I have to agree with that. And when we talk about honesty, I'm going to refer a little bit to the rent credit also, because, you know, bottom line is we have the rent credit is a, and we discussed this, but back to honesty again. If we're going to give an excess subsidy to folks, let's do it based on what it is, and that's an extra welfare payment, it's an extra whatever by whoever it is, and that's not a bad thing. But to arbitrarily say that 19% of rent that you pay, you're going to get back in property tax relief, it's really not honest, because that's not the portion that they're paying in property taxes for their rent. And quite frankly, I think it makes sense from both the standpoint of keeping promises we've made, keeping being a good partner as a state, Madam Chair and members, with these agreements. It's very, very important that we follow through on these. It's a matter of integrity for us as legislature and for the state. So putting this back in place for Job Z, I think, is important. And it's, quite frankly, it's also important for the working people in those Job Z businesses to make sure that they can carry out their mission of trying to be profitable, pay the wages that they're paying, and going on with business. So, Madam Chair, that's my amendment, and I would ask for a roll call.
Okay. Let's see, Representative Demmer requests a roll call on the A-12 amendment. Discussion, please, Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, thanks for agreeing. Unfortunately, it's not going to get you my vote on this provision. I know, it's a shock. We'll use the $60 million number that we used on the Zellers Amendment in terms of the impact on renters across the state, the impact upon the elderly across the state, that Representative Demmer is asking to pay for a program that's been shown to have very little, if any, accountability, very little, if any, impact. I recall last year in this committee, folks came forward to celebrate the moving of jobs from St. Louis Park to, I want to say, North Branch. Maybe not North Bend, somewhere up there, and they were so happy that state tax dollars have been used to move jobs from one part of the state to the other. Not to create jobs, not to support jobs, not to maintain jobs, just to move them around. That's the Job Z program. Well, not only is Representative Demmer taking $60 million out of the pockets of the elderly and lower income folks, if you look at the provisions on 4.34 to 4.36, if the landlord doesn't provide the certificate of rent paid, it now becomes incumbent on the renter to somehow come up with a statement of property taxes the property identification number, all the technicalities that are sent not to the renter but to the landlord, and figure out how to file that with the Department of Revenue to get their rent credit that they are owed back. It's burdensome on, this is a strategy is more burdensome on the landlord, it's more burdensome on the renter, and it's unfair to the folks who actually rely on the renter's credit and pay their property taxes through their rent. Thank you. F for a no vote.
Representative Loffler. Oh, excuse me, Representative I apologize. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick response. You know, we can debate about the value of Job D going forward, but bottom line is it's in place. Commitments are made, contracts are signed, development agreements are in place. We can debate whether it was a good idea or not, but that's hindsight, that's 2020. I happen to believe it's good. Some happen to believe it's not good. The bottom line is the commitments were made, and I find it very interesting that we have been passionate speeches about keeping promises made and abiding by our word, but that only seems to be when it's beneficial to us in our causes. That is very, very interesting and disingenuous. The last thing I would comment on is the renter's credit, and again, it's about honesty. It's not about saying that these things shouldn't be done. It's about honesty. And the saying that people don't have to, that have, they have a right to this and don't maybe have to have a little responsibility for claiming the credit, I don't think is necessarily a bad thing either, that they have to do that. But that would be my comments with that, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Loffler, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't expect that Representative Demmer made intended offense, but I must say, for someone who represents 7,700 rental buildings in my district, the majority of whom are hardworking people who are hoping to keep their jobs through a tough economy, to equate the words welfare with the renter's credit, we don't do that with a property tax refund that people are fortunate enough to own a home, earn, and to raise the issue of honesty related to the filing of it, I think it's just mischaracterizing it. These are people who are in a situation where they're not yet able to afford a home, or maybe they're people who lost a home because they lost a job. There's a lot more demand right now for rental housing because of people who have unfortunately, because of a job loss, lost mm-hmm. their home that they had just begun to start building equity in, or because of predatory lenders. And I think it's important for us to remember that this is one of the areas where we have not increased the benefits for years. It has half the income, maximum income of homeowners, so that I think if we're going to talk about fairness and transparency, we should really look at should families who pay taxes, whether it's through their rent or through writing a check to the county, have some equity, and should they be treated so much less. And so I really hope that as we go forward and use the renter's credit or other things that are proposed to balance off proposals, that we will refrain from implying that renters are anything other than like every other person who works hard for a living. It's trying to sustain a family. We heard a lot of testimony in the property tax division about from people who use this to pay for their schools, their kids' school supplies. It comes just before the start of school, and they count on this in order to be able to meet those long and growing lists that every school sends home with those families. And so I hope that as we continue this discussion, we'll give some credit to the fact that this is hardworking people, and that they have not seen the increases that this bill and past bills have provided for.
Thank you. Representative, to that point, otherwise we have Representative Liebling. Representative Liebling, then Zellers. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just kind of wanted to step back a little bit and just kind of, I think we're getting into some pretty tough territory, and we're hearing a lot of very heated words, and I just kind of want to reframe it a little bit and just kind of remind us that we're in a situation here in this state that is not just of our making. I mean, we could argue about whether we'd be in a better position if we'd made different decisions, but we didn't create the recession. You know, this is much bigger, and was, you know, maybe we could say that some decisions made on the national level had created this, but even, you know, this is a worldwide phenomenon now, and we have to make a lot of decisions, and we have to make cuts. And, we're cutting a benefit that had been given, to certain businesses, and you know, the whole discussion about keeping our promises, we all want to keep our promises, but
the bottom line is that we are in a situation where we have to make very difficult decisions, and we could characterize all of the cuts we're making as not keeping our promises if we wanted to. So, you know, I just want to kind of remind people to not, you know, not impugn motives and kind of step back from some of this really heated rhetoric and take a deep breath, because it's going to get, if this is tough, and it's just going to get tougher from here, and we just have to make these difficult decisions. And, you know, I think, again, the chair said it so well, you know, but for the public that's watching, you know, we don't like raising taxes, and we don't like cutting anybody's benefits either. I mean, nobody likes to hurt anybody, but we all do have different priorities on this committee. There's no question about that. But, you know, nobody takes any joy in any of this, and we would really prefer to give everybody everything they come in and ask us for. It's not easy to say no to people, either in cutting or asking them to pay more.
Thank you. Rep. Gonzalez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, to the point of the Job Z, when the program was first initiated, there were some folks that had the exact same concerns Representative Dabney had, that we would set up a metro versus rural or greater Minnesota versus lesser Minnesota. And Representative Dabney, that's why I introduced a bill this year to make the whole state a Job Z. So if you bring a business to the state, if you expand in the state, we'll give you a tax holiday on that if you'll do anything to bring jobs into the state. Because that way, the other part of what Job Z doesn't recognize is that our business owners who've been here, who've toiled under these high rates, that if they expand, which we want them to do in our state, we give them a tax holiday. Now, granted, that's in government speak, you have to quote-unquote pay for that, but if we've got a declining economy, declining revenues, you know, if we give that away a little bit of something for somebody who to add a new job at one point in time going forward, we'll get something in the long run, because it'll be jobs for people. And the portion of Representative Demers' amendment on the renter's credit, it's not the folks who are getting it or the worthiness of the program. It's just saying that it's, you get a credit for what you paid for. If you want to give them a lump sum check on top of what they pay in taxes, that's fine. But this is seen as a windfall. And we had this discussion a couple of years ago, I think, about some college kids who whoever had the lowest income would be, you know, quote unquote, on the lease and have a couple of friends living with them off the lease, so that it looked like there was a lower income on the apartment or for the lease or whoever's renting, so you'd actually see a bigger return, even though there were two or three people living with them. So the program's not the point. It's just you're getting a refund for what you paid, and that's what the program is supposed to be meant for, not as a windfall after the fact. So, you know, impugning the motives of the program, I don't think that's what Representative Demmer is doing. I wasn't doing either. It's just saying you get paid for what you put in taxes, just like we do for the PTI program for homeowners. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Rep. Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think what Representative Demmer's amendment does is enable our state to stay out of a legal morass that is going to be created through the tax bill if it were to be enacted. The state made a contract, signed a contract with businesses to participate in these programs. It wasn't a one-year contract. If it was a one-year contract, we could go in and revise it every year. It was a multi-year contract, and I don't know if it was 12 years. I'm not the Job Z expert, but this is a 12-year contract. So if the state is going to now say, even though we made a contract with you and you located your business and are abiding by the provisions of that contract, we're not going to abide by ours, I would suggest that that will create a legal situation that would be difficult for the state to deal with going forward. And while I'm not an attorney, it just seems common sense to me that when the state makes a contract, it should abide by that contract. I see you looking at the Job Z statute, Madam Chair. I hope it's a different statute. Maybe Mr. Michael can tell me, but it seems to me that it's a multi-year contract. And the other thing about that is that it's a terrible message for the state to send to businesses who are looking at locating in our state. We already have high taxes. We have significant regulatory burdens. And now what we're going to tell the investors that are looking at the state of Minnesota is, even if we're going to make a deal with you, no deal. No deal. You have to abide by the provisions of your side of the deal,
but we don't have to abide by the provisions on our side of the deal. And Madam Chair, I think that that is a really, really terrible message to send to the folks that we need here in the state of Minnesota to create the jobs and provide the jobs to the folks the folks who need them. And so I'm really concerned about the message that sends. But furthermore, I mean, related to this renter's credit issue again, it would be as if this is a property tax piece. It's in our property tax section of our statute. So the dollars that we're spending are supposed to be used for property tax provisions. It would be as if our PTR were to be paid on the mortgage that people are paying versus the property taxes that people are paying. So again, it's about effective and targeted use of the dollars, the limited dollars, the dollars that we're going to be finding very difficult, making very difficult decisions around. It's about the effective use to fulfill the missions of the programs for which those dollars are intended. And again, this does not do that. And so I appreciate Representative Demmer bringing forward his amendment, which creates a better and more effective use of the state dollars and also ensures that our state abides by the contract that we make. Whatever we think about the JobZ program individually is irrelevant to this amendment. This amendment is about abiding by the contracts and the decision that the state has made and signed in good faith.
Okay, so members, I'm going to call for the vote, but what I'll just tell Representative Brown that what I was actually asking Mr. Michael for and looking for is the authority in the Constitution for us to make these choices, and it's in Article 10, Taxation, First Sentence, Section 1, Power of Taxation, Exemptions, Legislative Powers. The power of taxation shall never be surrendered, suspended, or contracted away, and goes on, and we absolutely are able to do this. We can disagree about whether or not we should, but members, a lot of things are changing for a lot of people right now. They're losing their health care and things aren't getting funded and people are in tough situations. So certainly I think Representative Liebling framed it as sort of making choices here and it's rough. So I would encourage a no vote. Ms. Bergman will take the roll.
Representative Demmer? Thank you, Madam Chair. One final comment. You know, we talk about businesses like it's some other thing. Business is people. It's what it is. Keep in mind, what was the purpose of doing this? It was so we could encourage people to do something that we've all talked about in our campaign, something we all think is very, very important in our economy. Yeah. We want people to invest. We want people to invest in our economy by buying goods and services, by purchasing land, by investing in their own intellectual wealth, by trying to or knowledge, by trying to expand what they do and grow jobs. That's what JobZ is about. And whether or not we think we can make changes to that, as in all programs, we make changes, someday it might go away, whatever it is. But the bottom line is, this accomplished the purpose. We encourage private investment in terms of the facilities, in terms of the people. That was part of the deal. We also encourage job creation. There were jobs created for people. I'm talking about the working people. The jobs that are created by these businesses are in jeopardy if we start taking away the benefits that were that predicated them being able to offer the jobs they offered. And as we take away this, by increasing their taxes, if you will, keep in mind, every single one of us probably in our communities has a business that may be JobZ related that could be laying off people because now they're not able to satisfy their cash flow structures and their income structure because now they're paying tax they didn't plan on paying. This is about working people that we're talking about. It's about people that followed through on their commitment to invest, and they probably invested in something that's a 25-year deal, and now we're going to say, well, we're just going to change our mind because it looks like you got the money and you did what you're supposed to do. Now let's take it away, and thanks for doing this. But it's about people. It's about jobs. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Ferdinand, I'll take the roll.
One tap, please.
No.
Anderson?
Aye.
Broad?
Yes.
Carlson?
No.
David? Dabney?
No.
Demmer?
Yes.
Bill?
No.
Deepish?
No.
Towney?
Yes.
Eastland?
Aye.
Gardner?
No.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Kostrom?
No.
Coonan?
No.
Paul?
Yes.
Lanning? Les?
No.
Liebling?
No.
Bachler?
No.
Boone?
Aye.
Marquardt?
No.
Mullery?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Reiner?
No.
Rukavina?
No.
Rude?
No.
Silver?
No.
Ballard?
Aye.
David? Lanning?
There being 9 ayes and 19 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further amendments, and I'll tell you what I have in front of me, members, just so you know, in the order they've been given to me. Eastland, Coonan told me that the bovine's ready to go. Loon, Garofalo, Tilbury, Gardner, and I have the author's amendment that we've never taken up. So that's what I know of. So, members, if the page has heard any of that, they can just pass all those out, and you can come back up and check with me. So let's go to Eastland next. Reps and Butts.
I just wanted to just take a minute. I just wanted to, as we're calling the roll, you know, we see who's here and who's not here, but I just wanted to make sure all the members knew that Representative Lanning would love to be here, but he's up in Moorhead with the governor, again, dealing with some of the issues related to the flood, and I just wanted to make sure we had that on the record. I know he feels very strongly about many of these issues, all of these issues, especially issues related to property taxes and mandate reform and job Z and border zones and all those things. And so I just wanted to make sure I had that on the record for Representative Lanning.
And I appreciate that so much because that is absolutely true. And Representative Marquardt has struggled with this as well. And maybe he wants to make a statement here. Members, he is the property tax chair. So he's in a very difficult position and has been invited to be with the governor this morning. And both Representative Marquardt and Representative Lanning had to make difficult choices here. And Representative Lanning would absolutely want to be doing this. Representative Marquardt, of course, is the property tax chair. So Representative Marquardt, anything you want to add on that? But members should know that Representative Lanning would never be missing his vote. But Representative Marquardt,
thank you, Madam Chair, and you're exactly right. And the flood recovery in the Red River Valley is going to be a huge issue, and we're all working on that. And it can't be in two places at once. So appreciate those comments.
Thank you, and thank you, Representative Broad. Representative Eastland. Representative Eastland now moves the H2323A20 amendment. Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is just a short amendment to delete the lodging tax provision that's in the bill. I think we all understand the circumstances that cities find themselves in or local governments find themselves in looking for revenue. But I think this is an inappropriate provision that I'd like to see removed from the bill. Basically, the lodging tax is a local option tax. And in statute, the local option is exercised with the understanding that the revenue and the proceeds are going to be used for tourism, for events, for things that actually promote the economic benefit of the hospitality industry, which actually pays this tax. The hotels, motels, resorts are experiencing, I think, some lower occupancies. There's less discretionary money. People are not traveling and using them as often at this point. And to take this money away from what it's originally intended to do, I think, is really taking an economic development tool away from the industry that has agreed to pay this tax under the understanding that they would receive some of the benefits. So I would just propose that we remove this from the bill.
I'm going to go to Representative Mr. Michael and then Representative Bill next. And members should know this is my bill, and so I just want to discuss it just for a moment. I have made a number of changes to it. I'm going to ask Mr. Michael to discuss those before we get to the vote so people know that it's changed since the way I introduced it. But I do want to clarify, this is not a tax increase. Tax doesn't go up. And it is not mandatory. It is a local government decision if they would opt to do this. And so I just want to get that clear because there's been some confusion. People think there's a tax increase here. There isn't. And they think the state's requiring it, and it isn't. It would be really between these folks locally, between their mayors and city councils and lodging industry. And it's really a reprioritization. I mean, is it the most important to have a dedicated tax to lodging right now and tourism, or is it for, you know, police or whatever? And different communities would make different choices. And I think in the hearing, I just should note that I say that I have the largest hospitality industry in the state in my district. The hotel, motel, hospitality industry is larger than Minneapolis and St. Paul combined. So if you want to know where the big lodging receipts come in, it's my community. You know, my guess is my community wouldn't do it. That's just my guess.
That would be between my mayor and council and the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and everybody else would get in a fight, and they'd have to make choices if, due to their market value credit cuts, they wanted to do this or not. So I just want to just be really clear, it's voluntary, but I want to ask Mr. Michael what the changes were, and I also, you know, I know Representative Bill had concerns, and I've attempted to address some of those. Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the difference between Representative Lynchewski's original bill and the provision that's in the Delete Everything amendment is that county and town taxes are deleted from this, so the authority would only apply to cities. And the second thing is the concern that Representative Bill raised about some cities that collect the tax on behalf of another entity for lodging facilities outside of the city, that would not apply. So it would only, so the way to think about this, it would only apply to lodging taxes imposed by a city on facilities within the city.
So Representative Bill and Reiner, Representative Bill.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, that was the amendment that I was going to offer, a verbal amendment, so Representative Eastland beat me to the punch here. You know, I have received hundreds of emails on this, against this provision, and I have not received a single solitary email or vote, I'm sorry, email or phone call or letter, nothing, absolutely nothing from a single jurisdiction, whether it be a township, a county, or a city. I've received nothing, zero, and almost every single jurisdiction in my district has lodging tax, almost. There are a couple of unorganized that do not. And I just don't believe that this has to be in there. It doesn't cost us any money in our spreadsheet on this thing. It, you know, cities have the ability to raise and lower taxes and respond to how we do our bills here at the state legislature. And this is a very important component, and I don't see why that I would want my city councils to get drug into or to initiate or be drug into a conflict over this when it has worked so well over all of these years. And again, I want to repeat, I have received no communication from any unit of government requesting this, but I have received hundreds of emails from folks that have lodging establishments that oppose it. So I'm supporting the Eastland Amendment, and I'd like to just let the members know that if this passes, there's no real skin off of our nose in the tax committee in terms of the spreadsheet.
Okay, further discussion, Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question for Mr. Michaels. Yes, Mr. Michaels, if a community already has a contract in place that specifies how tourism taxes will be spent or allocated once they're collected, what impact would this have on that existing contract?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Mike.
This essentially, the chair's provision preempts other laws that require dedication of these revenues, but if they have a legal contract that requires them to spend that money for some other purpose, this does not preempt or void that contract, so those contracts would continue, and the cities would be bound to continue paying under those contracts, is my reading of it.
We were discussing Representative Eastland. Okay, Representative Eastland requests a roll call. For the discussion, Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and you know, I've gotten a lot of emails against this too, and I have to say that after that we had the hearing on this and I made some comments on it, at that time I got some angry emails after that. And I hadn't at that time actually made up my mind on this provision. But I have given it quite a bit of thought since then. And I have to say that my community, I think we might have more hospitality, more beds per citizen than you do, Representative Lynchewski. I mean, Rochester has a huge hospitality industry, and we, you know, it's because of the Mayo Clinic and so on, we really do. And so, you know, I appreciate their position on this, but you know, I think that the number of emails we've gotten really tells us how well organized this this community is. I mean, after all, this is the tourism industry. These people are there. Their job is message. And they do know how to message. And, you know, they are very effective at it. There's no question about it. But I don't think that means, you know, I think I've learned over the years that I've been here that you have to really look beyond how many emails you get on one side of something or another, because a lot of that has to do with who's finding out about it, who's messaging it, how well organized they are, and so on. And sometimes after you, after a vote, you find out that people really had feelings about it that you didn't hear from, and you didn't hear from them for one reason or another. And that might be the case here. I really think that we are in such tough times that it's really important for us to give local governments this kind of flexibility, even if they're not out there yelling for it. Because I think that there's going to be, when we get this budget done and people start to really experience the cut, and fortunately we're not in this bill cutting LGA as much as we had feared, but... you know, I think that they're going to need all the flexibility they can get. And I think that, although I think that we're nothing against the tourism industry, and they may well be correct about how vital they are and how important they are and how much they bring in per dollar spent, I really think that we here are not in a position to make that judgment. The local governments are. And the idea that there is a tax that is dedicated to one industry, I think, is... And that, as far as I can tell, nobody has, no elected officials, at least in my area, really have a lot of oversight over how those dollars are spent, the dedicated ones. I just think that this is a pretty modest proposal, and I know they don't like it, and I know they, in fact, that's an understatement that they don't like it, but I just think it's a tool that we ought to be giving our local elected officials. And that I think that the chair is absolutely right on this, and I think she's been courageous in putting this forward against this very vocal group of people. And, you know, if they really are bringing in this money and they are doing such a great service for Minnesota, which they may very well be, I think that they can make that case to the local government, and probably most of them won't change a thing. But having that tool is going to be really important, in my view.
Thank you. Okay. Here, you did that. Representative Downing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is another provision that that doesn't, quote-unquote, blink back off. It sounds like we're giving locals the authority, or does it, Madam Chair?
4 years.
4 years. Okay, thank you.
Excuse me, Representative Downing. I might have did I change it to 2 years, Mr. Michael? I had it at 4. It blinks off, right? I apologize. I can't. Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, it sunsets on December 31, 2012.
Thank you. No more question or comment. Thank you.
Further discussion. And there was a roll call? Oh, Representative Dill? No, we'll take the roll.
Well, thank you. And I just want clarification. Does this does the language in the bill, Section 35, it only regards the lodging tax? I wondered if we could amend that to include the food and beverage tax in the city of Minneapolis. I mean, I'm sure the city of Minneapolis could use that money to supplement their budget as well and make that a local decision. And also, I was thinking about the half-cent sales tax for the Twins Stadium. I'm sure they could use that to help their budget as well, and that could be a local decision. And also the transit tax that was put on for the local transit downtown. I'm sure that they could use that money as well to help with their local budget. So I'm wondering if those who are supporting this provision for lodging taxes haven't looked at this globally enough, and that we should maybe reconsider and fold in, it might be appropriate amendment at another time to fold in those taxes as well to help certainly the city of Minneapolis and maybe Hennepin County, because I know they're struggling. I'm very concerned about that county, Madam Chair.
Representative Dill, you make a great argument, and if this amendment goes on, you could offer that as amendment. I guess, you know, I would just say I agree with the spirit of what you just said, because I don't like dedicated taxes, period. And this is another one, and unlike the lodging and hotel industry might say that they pay it, they don't pay it. People who stay in the bed pay it, and it's dedicated without scrutiny to them, and we're in an extraordinary time. So that's why I thought of it. I honestly think that a lot of folks won't do it.
but it's just one more tool. And I don't like, you know, I don't like these dedicated taxes, period. But, you know, I didn't even vote for the 3/8 because I just, sorry, I know a lot of people love that in this committee, but I'm just not a fan of this stuff. But, you know, I think we're ready to vote. Representative Eastland.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. You know, and we're not voting, this isn't about this particular tax. This particular tax exists whether we like it or not. And I think the issue here is the hospitality people, the hotels, motels, and resorts, I mean, they pay property tax, they pay income tax, they collect sales tax, they do all the things that they're supposed to do as a business to bring revenue into the state. And this is just one little local option tax that's been put on them with the understanding that it will benefit them directly. And I think to change the rules, as Representative Dabney has been quoted many times today, to change the rules in the middle of the game is really not what we want to do. It's not being honest, and we're not keeping our promises. I just think to change the statute at this point is really reneging on something that the hospitality industry was depending on us to keep. So I just appreciate your support of the amendment.
Okay, for your discussion, if not, Ms. Bergman will take the roll.
Unpeppy?
No.
Anderson?
Aye.
Broad?
Yes.
Carlson?
No.
David?
Yes.
Dabney?
No.
Demmer?
Yes.
Bill?
Yep.
Cephas?
No.
Downey?
Yes.
Eastland?
Aye.
Gardner?
No.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Elstrom?
No.
Coonan?
No.
Holt? Lanning? Lesch?
No.
Liebling?
No.
Swoffer?
No.
Moon?
Yes.
Marquardt?
No.
Mallory?
No.
Murphy?
Nope.
Reinert?
Yes.
Rukavina?
Yes.
Rude?
No.
Goldberg?
Yes.
Silvery?
No.
Zeller?
Aye.
Therefore, being 14 ayes and 15 nays, the amendment does not pass. Very close, though. Thank you, Representative Eastland. Representative Loon. And let's see. Representative Loon now moves the H2323A31 amendment. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this amendment will delete Section 28, and that is the section in the bill that provides for the home residential heating fuel sales tax. And I paid for the amount raised by eliminating the PCR. We don't need that amount of money because the PCR, as we've been through this discussion before, raises about or expends about $10 million over a two-year biennium, and the provision is much smaller than that. But you know, members, in thinking about this, you know, this bill has a combination of things. We do an extended forest tier for higher income people, but we also have indicated to be more progressive. But we've got a huge list of regressive taxes, and we've debated those. I know that's a lot of dissension over that, whether you support or oppose cigarette taxes or liquor taxes and that. And those are regressive. But when you get down to something like heating your home in the wintertime, folks, there's no choice about that in Minnesota. I mean, that heat is frankly the bread of life in Minnesota. You can't survive without heating your home. People don't have a choice about that. And the legislation and the provision as it's drafted is really inconsistent. We aren't applying it across the board to every type of heating fuel, only to natural gas and electricity. So if you use fuel oil, if you use wood, if you use something else, you're not subject to this tax. So, you know, I'm just really struggling here with the kind of rationale of picking and choosing A, and B, wondering kind of how those amounts were established in the provision with regards to how much is an overage, because we had a little discussion in the committee about conservation, you know, which I'm for, but I'm not sure that, you know, whether these amounts make sense or not and what we're trying to get at. So, you know, you can choose to smoke or not. You can choose to have a drink or not. You can't choose whether or not you're going to heat your home in Minnesota. And I just think this is kind of above and beyond the pale here and what we're trying to do in the tax
provision tax bill. So I urge members to support this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Garner.
Madam Chair, I actually had an amendment to change the number here based on information that we were working late on, and I was just wondering if Representative Loon would consider temporarily withdrawing her bill until we get the numbers in order that are in there. If not, I'm okay with that too. We can vote for how we, but I would just offer that just so we had the right number in front of you.
Madam
discussion.
Madam Chair, just if I could ask a question of Representative Gardner, if you could to maybe give us a little information about what his change would be.
Madam Chair, certainly, after talking with the utilities last night after our meeting here, and Dr. Wolfman and Ms. Dalton went through some of the data from the Department of Commerce and elsewhere, and we were trying to find the right number so that we did not catch people in a regressive tax here, that we're focusing on people who are really using a lot, and we came up with 130% of average heating fuel use. My amendment, the A22 amendment, would increase the threshold for gas from 750 to 850 100 cubic feet, and the electric heat from 3,000 to 5,750. But Madam Chair, I'm going to just not ask that she withdraw it. We could just discuss the amendment right away. And then I have some comments on that, if you like.
Okay, so, well, first we're going to, Representative Loon, I think, has decided to, I saw the head shake. I think
amendment, okay. Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, I would ask for a roll call on the amendment.
Okay, so Representative Loon requests a roll call. Now, discussion to the amendment. Further discussion, Representative Garner, and then Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, you know, the original exemption was set up by, I'm told, former Speaker Irving Anderson as a compassionate way to avoid having people have the burden of the tax during the winter, and I agree with that concept. However, just with the change in housing mix, particularly in districts like mine, we have homes that use a lot, and as you've described in your analogies about the lake and so on, as we give breaks for people who don't necessarily need it, it causes pressure on people who do need the help. And so the idea here is to, for those folks who, you know, are going to have that 5,000 square foot house, to rationalize their energy use a little bit. And if not, fine, we'll have revenue in this deficit year. I hope that we can keep the folks who are in a more low-income situation, that we can keep the Meals on Wheels going, that we can do the heating systems programs, that we can have people get to schools that are adequately funded, mental health grants, serving our seniors, and a whole variety of other things. Now, Representative Broad did raise a good point yesterday, actually, and I perhaps we could work on this as we move forward with the bill. When we talk about heating assistance, we do have something called LIHEAP, which is the Low-Income Heating, Energy, and Assistance Program. For low-income folks, and I actually, you explained the idea in my head, Representative Broad, so I was up late after we were out of here last night, and you know, one thought I had is, if I can distill this as we go through the next committee to, you know, perhaps even look at people who are on LIHEAP and having an exemption of some kind with the Department of Revenue. But I was just looking at the LIHEAP numbers just for 2009, we have a regular block grant from the feds for $144 million to help people with their heating assistance. The income eligibility is 50% of the state median income. There's 126,000 households served. You know, these are some of the people with the older homes or people who are struggling. So I don't really think that these people are going to get caught in this net with the bill as amended, because we're looking at, you know, 130% of average use. And when I did the numbers here, the new numbers we have for revenue compared to the total tax expenditure for the revenue we forego from the exemption, only 13%, we're only getting 13% of the dollars that could be coming into the state. So that tells me that we're really only nicking part of the folks who are really using a lot. And if there are people who are in a drafty house that might be affected because of the efforts of President Obama and the Congress, there are scads of dollars available right now to get people on weatherization programs. The community action programs in my two counties, in Anoka and Ramsey County, are going to be weatherizing and insulating thousands of houses for people who are on waiting lists who have low incomes to help them for next winter, and that's all going to go happen this summer. So, you know, the time is now if we really want to rationalize some of our energy use and also put people to work using some of the federal dollars and solving a problem and increasing economic productivity. We stabilize energy prices for everybody else when we take out the peaks of energy use. As regards to the political contribution refund program, we've heard about that before. I disagree with my friend Representative Davis just because I had the opposite experience. Nobody had any interest in supporting me from the outside when I first ran for office, and even the second time around, nobody on my side really had any interest either. In terms of independent expenditures, I wish we could do something about that, but I was outspent 22-1 in independent expenditures, and I won by 51 votes. So it was shoe leather and the political contribution refund program that unseated the long-term incumbent. So I agree with the idea that this allows more competitiveness, and if the Republicans want to get the majority, they should support the political contribution refund program.
And Flint-Garton.
Thank you, Representative Broadbent Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I apologize, Representative Rukavina. I think you had your hand up first, and I blew past you. I'm sorry, Representative Rukavina.
Well, Madam Chair, I was just wondering what the future amendment by Gardner will do, but I see that it increases those cutoffs, so I guess my question is answered.
Okay, Representative Brock.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Gardner, I appreciate that you are changing your provision in the bill in the right direction, but I think the question we have before us with the Loon Amendment is even more fundamental and big picture than that. First of all, do we want to increase the cost of energy at this time when people are struggling to afford things already? And then secondly, as a policy matter, this legislature has decided to exempt things that are deemed to be necessities or requirements for just pure survival. For example, food. Food is not something we tax. Clothing. Clothing is not something we tax. And we all know that heating fuels are something that are absolutely crucial. And if we're going to keep that policy in place, which we can debate whether we want to going forward, but it's currently in place now, I think it's appropriate that heating fuels stay exempted out. And so, Madam Chair, I think it's a big picture policy direction that we're changing here. And to be aligned with what we already do for food and clothing, I think that we ought to leave this one the way it is in current law, and then let's have a greater discussion over all of those things going forward, which I expect that we will. But I think from a consistency standpoint, this is and also from the standpoint of this is not the time to increase costs on families, and increasing energy costs will hurt families.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gardner, when I saw this provision, what concerned me most is so we don't really know who we're going to be impacting with this provision. You're basing it off of what you consider the size of the house to be. And there are a lot of folks that are on low incomes that are living in these huge homes. If you go to Minneapolis, you drive around Minneapolis, where it's, some of the areas are in tough economic times right now, and those are huge houses. And you're saying for those folks that they don't get their electricity and their natural gas tax exempt, or you're also making the assumption that, if you live in a big home, that you can afford to take care of it. Well, what if you just lost your job? I've got people in my district that have been out of work for 6 months, and adding this little tax on top of it is just going to make it even worse for them. This is just not the right time, and I think it has some serious unintended consequences that I don't really get at the heart of the issue of what you want to do, and I would ask the members to support the Loon Amendment. Further discussion. If not, the clerk will take the roll.
Lentucky?
No.
Anderson?
Aye.
Braun?
Yes.
Carlson?
No.
Davis?
Yes.
Sammy?
No.
Zimmer?
Yes.
Bill?
No.
Dietrich?
No.
Downey?
Yes.
Eastland?
Aye.
Gardner?
No.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Hilton?
No.
Coonan?
No.
Cole?
Yes.
Lanning? Lesch?
No.
Liebling?
No.
Schlossler?
No.
Boone?
Yes.
Marquardt?
No.
Mallory?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Reiner?
No.
Rusavina?
No.
Root?
No.
Colbert?
No.
Silvery?
No.
Zeller?
Aye.
There being 10 ayes and 19 noes, the amendment does not prevail. President Garofalo. President Garofalo is not here. Let's go. And I'm sure he'll be back. Representative Tilbury. And I have Tilbury, Garofalo, Gardner, author's amendment. That's what I've got left until we get more. So if there are more, we may want to hand them out. Coonan, I'm sorry, I forgot about that. Representative Tilbury, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This particular amendment would reinstate the authority.
Okay, excuse me, Representative Tilbury now moves the 09-0427X. The 7X, Representative Tilbury.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This particular amendment would reinstate the authority for cities and counties to issue bonds to fund actuarial liabilities for post-employment benefits without referendum if the municipality had acted to limit necessary health care benefits to the minimum level required by state law for those hired on or after January 1st, 2009. In other words, the OPED provision in that in our bill that you had removed. I know that I'm going up a steep climb because I know that the chair of our tax committee does not support this particular amendment, and also Representative Marquardt from the property tax doesn't also support this amendment. So I thought, what could I do that would help this case that might be different than anyone else? And I thought I'd add in all of the words that everyone has been saying all the way through and see where I could go with that. For example, I've heard many times that people have said this is really, really good. And I think that the more really you put into that, it makes it better. But this really is something that will work because it saves Anoka County, for example, $15 million in this particular case. It doesn't touch the K-12 in this particular amendment at all, so that's not even an issue. So I'm going to try very, very good. But I also know the law of diminishing returns means that if I use too many reallys or too many varies, it's going to go down in flame. This does give Anoka County, for example, a tool in the toolbox. We've heard quite a bit of those. And I do know that the counties feel like the rug is pulled out from under them. I also know that if we don't put this particular opportunity back in, it does, you know, change the rules of the game in the middle of the game. So I think that the bottom line is that we do need to have a chance for counties to be able to use every tool that they have possible. And I know that the record of our amendments today is pretty bleak because a lot of them have gone down in flames or up in smoke. So thank you.
Thank you. Discussion to the amendment. If not, we're going to take the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. No. The amendment is not adopted. I think Representative Tilbury and Dietrich, I could hear saying yes pretty loudly. But I think the no's are a little bit louder, so the amendment does not prevail. Representative Garofalo. Representative Garofalo now moves the 8-2-3-2-3-A-28 amendment. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in committee, we had a discussion about the exception for personal property tax used for generating electrical power facility. And I made a comment in committee about, you know, do we always do these? And it turns out we do always do this, that every power plant that has this gets this exception. And every single year we make them come up here and kiss our rings and bow to us and get this put into law. And it just seems like if we put a standard definition in place where we have to have the support of the local county or the local city or township with the facility that proposes it, that everyone signs off on it. They don't need to come up here and have their provision tucked into a bill and get complicated in the legislative process. At the time we discussed this, it seems something that you were supportive of, and I'm hoping you'll accept the amendment.
Members, I think Representative Garofalo has laid it out exactly right. I think there's absolutely no problem with this amendment. We keep asking people to come through here, and we just keep approving them. Discussion. Rep. Marquardt.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, we tend to always approve those. The one concern I have is that while we tend to all approve those, we do put stipulations, and the state has a little more control. For example, Representative Kalin just came before the Tax Committee last week with a bill like this, and the local folks and basically the state, I suppose, were able to negotiate some things. It might be environmental, whatever that might be, and I just want members to know that you would lose that if you want. I mean, this is a tax preference, so I mean, they could pay the tax and do what they want, but I mean, with this tax preference, the question is, do we as a state want a little negotiation power? So that's the only concern I would raise. So.
Madam Chair, this is that point.
Representative Garofalo.
And Representative Marquardt, 2 points. One, I deliberately drafted the amendment so it would not interfere with Representative Kalin's language. That is totally separate. And second of all, you'll notice that it does require the consent of the county, the city or township, so that they, if there was a local concern that where they wanted to put these sorts of restrictions in place, they absolutely hold that power over there. If they refuse to sign the form, they ain't going to get their exemption.
Thank you. Further discussion. Members, I just put it to the committee because, like, you know, I think both people are making a good point here. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Representative Gardner. Representative Gardner. Yes, the Representative Gardner, I think, do we have this one ready yet, Representative Gardner? Is it the 22?
Yes, I don't, yeah.
Okay, so Representative Gardner now moves the 823-23-22.
Oh, Madam Chair, I have it, and you probably have it.
I have one. The pages have the 22. Okay, thank you. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I forgot to mention that Representative Davis has been trying to curry favor with me on the floor. He keeps giving me nut goodie bars, but it ain't going to work.
Minnesota product.
Madam Chair, again, after many lengthy discussions during the evening and first thing this morning, Dr. Wilson and Ms. Dalton and the utilities have come up with a scale to figure out a more rational way to narrow the exemption of home heating fuel. So this increases the amount of natural gas that would be exempt from 750 cubic feet to 750 cubic feet, 850, and then it increases the threshold for electric heat from 3,000 to 5,750. You know, some folks have talked about taxing necessities. You know, energy is specifically exempted from the streamlined sales and use tax agreement. So that does allow us to narrow it some. And, you know, people who are losing their jobs or who are concerned about necessities have the ability to make choices, and, you know, the tax isn't something they'll be looking at. It'll be the electric bill as a whole or the gas bill. And even if they would have to work pretty hard to get over these limits if they were in that situation to even be taxed. So raising it to a more rational level, and I'd like to ask your support.
Okay, discussion.
I mean, even if you hate the section, you should vote for it because it picked up more
people.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gardner, I mean, who's this going to apply to? How do we know as a committee? I don't know if it was Representative Broad or Anderson or Groff. Somebody was talking about, you know, the people on a fixed income living in, you know, big homes and wherever it is, whether it's a big farm home and they're no longer actively farming, whether it's, you know, somewhere in the suburbs, whether it's in Minneapolis, some of the big homes, and they live there, they raise their family there. Now they're on a fixed income, and I'm not sure that, can you assure me that they're going to be able to be covered by this, and you're not, you know, you've got people on fixed incomes who probably should have this tax exemption, and I'm not sure that your amendment gets us there.
Representative Gardner.
Madam Chair, Representative Coles, to give you that assurance, Representative Coles, we would have a data collection and integration system that would creep you out.
you'd have to know how many people were living in the house, exactly how many square feet there were, what the exact age of the house is. I think it would make you uncomfortable. So I've tried for several months with a lot of good folks to try and figure out the most precise way to do this. And as I said, if in fact we are nicking people here with the tax, once they get over that very large threshold, they're not paying it for the use that they already had underneath. But there are just lots of resources for them to be able to say, here's some changes I can make for people who do have low incomes. There are, as I said, I think there's more than 400,000 people who are eligible for LIHEAP funds. So I've tried to do my best, Representative Coles, to be as precise as I can without creeping you up.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Gardner, I appreciate your efforts to not creep me out, but to be completely honest, the whole proposal creeps me out. And I'm, you know, just as a matter of principle, Representative Gardner, I can't support this. I mean, you're making a decision as to what's an appropriate amount to exempt or not. We should be exempting it all, and you're not doing that. And I don't trust your judgment over this, Representative Gardner, with all due respect, any more than I would trust mine or Representative Demers or Representative Murphy's. Let's do this right. Let's not. Let's exempt these home heating fuels. Let's not play this game about this level's acceptable and this level's not, because as you said, Representative Gardner, we don't know who we're going to hit. We don't know the number of seniors who aren't going to get the relief that they should be getting. And so just as a matter of principle, Representative Gardner, I understand you're trying to make a provision in the bill that I don't like, that you don't like, a little bit better, but I don't think the provision should be there at all.
Chair Representative Broad. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering, with the changes to Representative Gardner's amendment, or with his amendment, if that were to go on, are there any significant changes to the spreadsheet? I don't understand the true impact on that.
Okay, so Representative Gardner.
Madam Chair, Representative Broad, I have an unofficial number, but I, at the current time, I think we ought to stick with what's in the spreadsheet, which is, was it 9.1 million? If it goes anywhere, I think it's going to go up in terms of revenue that it would bring in. But that.
Okay, so.
Madam Chair, maybe I'm not understanding. How would it go up? If you're lessening or if you're narrowing the group, it would seem to me that the amount of money coming in would decrease.
Representative Broad, that's because the initial assumptions in the original fiscal note were incorrect based on lack of enough information, and now we have more information from the utility.
Madam Chair, just a quick follow-up. Representative Gardner, again, I appreciate you moving it, but I'm still concerned about the policy decision we're making. In this bill that we're going to be voting on today, we have made a distinct adjustment to exempt out certain things. For example, sorry, Representative Dabney, to bring up your provision, but we're now going to say we're going to exempt out from tax folks who are pooling together to have car opportunities, but yet we're going to charge people tax on providing heat to their homes. So I'm a little concerned about the priorities contained within the provisions of the bill, and it just seems like they're out of whack.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry to kind of go back here, but just sort of a little housekeeping thing. I think the chair read A22, and some of us here have A23. Okay, I just wanted to make sure we were looking at the right.
So Representative Gardner withdraws his motion for the A22, and Representative Gardner now.
No, Representative. There's a separate energy one, which is A23. I don't know whose it is. Mine's A23.
Okay, so Representative Gardner again moves the A22 amendment. The A22. Okay, we're all going to wait a moment while we get the A22. Just going to hang on, everybody. I think it was actually one of the very first things passed out today. Can you pass along?
Anybody?
A22. Yeah, hang on. Let's just make sure we have it. I think A22 is one of the very first ones I got today. So if you go down to the tabletop and look under your pile, you're probably going to find it. Some people have it. Okay.
Let's wait until everyone has it, because Representative Gardner, unless it's not, is it the 822? Let's just wait until everyone has it. I do have it too. I don't know. A22. So the A22 is before us until we hear differently, but let's just wait till we all have it. Okay, does everyone have the A22? Okay, so Representative Gardner, I think we're on Representative Liebling. Representative Liebling.
Oh, no, Madam Chair, that was all I wanted to say.
Okay, Representative Loon. Representative Loon.
Hi, Madam Chair, if I could just ask a couple of questions of Representative Gardner, and just, I'll not ask my question about the spreadsheet, because it sounds like we don't necessarily have numbers for sure on whether or not this saves money and how much, but why just the two types of heating fuels and not addressing all of the others, Representative Gardner?
Madam Chair, Representative Loon, I'll be perfectly frank. It's really hard to measure and track and account for the other types of fuel. You might have one propane dealer in town, but you might have 10 fuel oil dealers, and you can go from one fuel oil dealer to another, and no one's going to be able to track it. And again, that starts to creep you out, and you start reporting what your fuel oil purchases are. We have coal. We exempt coal from the tab. I don't know anybody uses coal anymore. There's another amendment here that would seem to, I'm assuming, is going to allow us to exempt all these other things that you have in your corn cob stove and other stuff like that. So it's really a measurement tool, and the natural gas and electric heat are in there just because they're metered. That's the basic answer.
Well, Madam Chair, I think that the ultimate nugget of your idea, Representative Gardner, I think you and I maybe would be in agreement, but I'm in absolute disagreement with the approach here of what you're trying to get. Thinking about the bills that we pay on our household, and in Eden Prairie, the city bills you for your water on a quarterly basis, and if you use over a certain amount, they kind of have an amount that you're, you know, kind of average use. Above that, you're charged a conservation surcharge. So if you water your lawn a lot in the summertime, which they don't want you to do, and you're doing long days, you pay a surcharge. And, you know, I'd be willing to discuss and work with you on something like that, but slapping a tax on that goes on your bill that's probably, I mean, I don't know if you're envisioning that it's going to be explained, that this is your allotment for heating your home to a certain amount, and, you know, what kind of guidance consumers are going to get. Like, you know, Lean family, you're going to need to set your thermostat at 65 degrees, and if you set that for the summer or the winter months, you're not going to incur the surcharge, and if you go over that, you will. I mean, what guidance is going to be given to consumers to try to avoid that, first of all? Second of all, you know, I'm glad that there's going to be money available from the stimulus funds to help people weatherize their homes, but I don't know to what degree that's going to help everyone. I think the notion that all of these old homes are going to be weatherized to prevent them being subject to this tax is really optimistic. And, you know, we had the experience of having our furnace go out and having to replace it about a year ago. You know, there was, I think, maybe a $500 tax credit because we purchased a high-efficiency furnace. Even with that, it was about $6,500. That's a lot of money for people right now that have to front to pay for a higher efficiency gas, to use natural gas furnace in their homes. So, you know, I just don't think this is realistic. I think in this economy, this is not the direction. And again, harkening back to, I think the point I was really trying to make, which Representative Broad picked up on, you know, we have made choices in the tax code here in Minnesota that certain things are an absolute necessity. And you know, we're saying that, you know, heating your home over a certain amount, it should be taxed, but, you know, if you go out and buy a $1,000 suit or something in Nordstrom's, that isn't taxed. And this just doesn't make sense to me.
Thank you. We're going to take the vote of Representative Gardner.
Sorry, just for clarity, the PUC sets utility rates, not the state. And I'm actually the author of the legislation requiring public water suppliers to use a conservation rate structure. So if they didn't use one before because of the bill we passed last year, they do.
Okay. Are we ready to vote? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carried.
No.
Now I'm going to move the Coonan amendment. Representative Coonan.
Give a number on that one.
Representative Coonan, I can't find mine. Okay, so members, Representative Coonan now moves 2323A30, the A30 amendment. Representative Coonan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since we last talked about this earlier today, the bill, the amendment's been redrafted to include funding for the Department of Ag to carry out the responsibilities here. The department will have to put some time into writing the grants for the bovine TB testing grant. What the amendment does is allow 5% of this money to be used for administrative expenses. It also makes sure that there's funding for the whole state before Minnesota was granted split status, and then after that, and the split status happened in October of 2008. After that, the grants would go to the affected area in northwest Minnesota. The department, from what I understand, would prefer that this remain a tax credit, but does want this amendment to go on to address some of the concerns that were drafted into the original bill. And I would appreciate members' support on the amendment.
Okay, discussion amendment. I think that's pretty clear, Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, Representative Coonan, why do we have a separate percentage for farmers who are incorporated as S-Corps as opposed to if they are sole proprietors?
Representative Coonan.
Madam Chair and Representative Demmer, you know, I really can't answer that. I know that's the way this has been drafted from the beginning, but I don't know the answer.
Representative Coonan, Mr. Michael. Mr. Michael, or Ms. Mandy. Yes, please, Ms. Mandy.
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, prior to last year, it was a 50% rate for both corporate and non-corporate owners of cattle. Last year, there was a recurrence of bovine tuberculosis in Minnesota, and the conference committee and I think perhaps the Senate before that wanted to provide property tax relief to people who were in what is now the modified accredited zone in northwestern Minnesota. And in order to fund the property tax relief, they reduced the income tax credit for corporate owners of cattle from 50% of testing expenses to 25% of testing expenses. And that's why there are two different percentages in there, but that is in current law for the income tax credit, and then the same parameters are just being transferred over to the new grant program.
Okay. Representative Demmer, please.
Well, thank you, Ms. Manzi. That's helpful. Can you tell me we have a separate definition for a farm corporation than we do for a regular corporation. I assume that follows through for S-Corps also. Can you tell me, without me looking up the 290.9725, which is the S-Corps you're talking about, which one is that? Are these the S-Corps that could be anybody, or are these the S-Corps that are specific to family farm corporations?
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, I don't know the answer to that question, and Mr. Michael might know the answer to it, or somebody from the department might, but I don't.
Anyone in the department just dying to know the answer to that? Mr. Michael?
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, those are just any S corporation. So this is not the, there's in the farm law, there's a separate law, separate designation of family farm corporations, but this is just the general tax law S corp reference.
Thank you. Okay, discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion carries. Okay, so now I'm going to move the author's amendment, which is, and I just want to look at staff. Is it done? I guess I'm looking over at Ms. Manzi. Is the author's amendment okay now? We had heard somebody still had to check something. Nope, we don't know. No. We've still got after this the Dill and the Demmer, and then any else that anyone has. But I want to get the author's amendment on now. I mentioned this earlier that we had a number of technical, summer, maybe a little substantive, and then there was the Representative Genius issue, that committee. And I was told throughout the day that it was still being worked on, and we think we have it now. So this is going to be the 823-23-832 amendment. And I'm going to ask Mr. Michael to walk through the amendment. And this is, I am not completely sure all of it, what's going on in this amendment. So Mr. Michael, this is the 832 members.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, just going through the amendment on page 48, line 26, that's just a cross-reference error. Page 1, line 4, that was a case where we were inadvertently repealing a section that we're amending on the motor vehicle lease transfer, so that needs to be taken out of the bill because we want to retain that. That's the same thing on line 5. Line 6 is just a clarification that the airport property is a permanent change and not a temporary section. Line 7, that is reinstating or deleting the changes to the sustainable forest provision from the bill. Line 8, that's deleting the disparity reduction credit changes. Lines 9 and 10 is deleting the reduction in the PILT payments. All of those changes result from changes in estimates going up that permit reduction of those provisions from the bill. Line 11 just deletes an extraneous word that got in when we switched from county aid to city aid. Line 12 deletes the reference to snuff flower. Line 13 and 14 deletes the reference to those single-dose snuff elements that are going to be taxed just as regular moist snuff. Line 16 and following, after discussions with the Department of Revenue, we made changes in the way the forest stock tax is done to mirror what was done with the fee that was done back in 2005. On page 2, lines 19 through 23, this replaces the language that that was in the amendment that provided for setting the cigarette sales tax rate to adjust for the excise tax increase. The way the bill was done, there would have been an adjustment that was done on July 1st and one on August 1st. What this does is to combine those in one adjustment on July 1st so that the rate won't change twice. And since the department has already done the survey and knows what that will be, we're just writing that into statute so they don't have to make a determination on that. The next lines from lines 24 through 32 are technical changes in the Rochester local sales tax provision, and the rest of the amendment is putting in the Representative Dietrich's bill on the mortgage registry tax that we inadvertently forgot to put in the delete everything amendment.
Okay, discussion to the A32 amendment. Discussion to the A32. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carried. Okay, so I have next Representative Demmer. Representative Demmer, did you have another one? So Representative Demmer now moved the 823-23-A23 amendment. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, getting back on the home heating fuel topic. Madam Chair, what this does basically, Representative Broad said it well earlier, we have a concept of exempting home heating fuel from sales tax, and we've talked about the amounts and that sort of thing. And basically what this does, expands it a bit and includes things, and quite frankly, I'm doing this on behalf of a constituent
who heats corn to heat their home, it's like the corn furnace. And she made a good point. She said, why, if I'm using corn to heat my home, do I pay sales tax? And if I'm using gas or coal or whatever, I don't pay sales tax. I'm heating my home. So what this does is this says other home heating fuels are exempt, excluding natural gas electricity.
Discussion. Representative Garney, partner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Representative Wilty had a bill for something like this to specify corn cobs or something like that. I think this is a good amendment, and I'd urge support.
And I think Representative Garner, you got his vote, but I'll tell you, Representative Demmer, I don't think there's any money for it. So I think this would cost money, unless someone, PCR. Representative Demmer.
Madam Chair, I checked on that, and you're right, Representative Gardner, this was something that Representative Wealthy worked on. I think the revenue note showed it was less than $2 million a year, which could be a significant amount, but again, we're talking about people that, this is not going into five. These corn furnaces, Madam Chair, and members are not in 5,000 square foot homes. We're talking about folks who are using corn or buying corn because they're trying to save money, and it's probably lower income type folks. And there is a fiscal cost to it. I understand that. I looked at the fiscal note that was prepared a couple of years ago, and it was less than $2 million, assuming people using corn. And I think at that time might have been based on a higher cost of corn too. So it's very small. I would assume it's probably a rounding error in most all of our budgets, Madam Chair, but you're right, there's some specific cost to it.
Okay, so members, I would urge a no vote. I know Representative Gardner is going to support the Demmer Amendment. We got that on the record. Any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. No. The amendment is not adopted.
Ooh. I might want to call a division.
Representative Demmer asked for a division.
We had a vocal group. I need to get better.
Representative Demmer asked for a division. All those in favor of the A 2323A23 amendment, please raise your hand. And him. And Garner.
Oh,
his hand's off. Garner's there, yeah.
I
think he's supporting it.
I'm going to support it.
Okay, all those up, thank you. All those opposed to the Demmer 23 amendment. Okay, members, for a while, it looks like people are voting twice, but those voting yes were 10, and those voting no were 17. The amendment does not prevail.
On this issue, can I make a recommendation, Representative Demmer?
Please.
Constituents to just go to the store, buy corn, dry it. They won't have to pay a sales tax, then they can burn it.
Okay, thank you. We've got we have the Dill Amendment. And this is a handwritten one, members, and Representative Dill now moves H2323A40. Representative Dill.
Thank you. In the bill, Madam Chair, it deletes an authority that the Cook County has, and they're preparing to take a vote on imposing a 1% sales tax in Cook County. They previously had a 1% sales tax in Cook County. That authority expired last year in the tax bill. We gave them authority again. Their vote has to be taken by the end of this calendar year, December 31st. And in the bill, by revoking the authority to impose the 1% and then giving back the authority to give them a 0.5%, I don't think that's that good of a deal for them. The reason that they hadn't taken a vote on it is because they were working with us, and I had a bill, and Senator Bach, I certainly know, will have the provision in his bill that narrows down the focus of what that tax could be spent for. So this amendment does nothing more than to remove the deletion of the Cook County authority that will expire anyway if they don't act on it by the end of December. Also, the way this is written, it would also allow them to adopt the other 0.5%. As well, so they actually could end up with 1.5%. But as you know, in the bill, I think it's in the local option sales tax component, section C on page 51. It says that is subject. That 0.5% is also subject to a reverse referendum. So I think the checks and balances are in place for this, and I would urge that you not delete the authority that was given. Particularly the fact that they are going to have to take a vote on it anyway. The general populace will have to vote on it by December 31st. And if they do adopt the other half percent, they just want to be more like Hennepin County to the best that they can possibly be. That's their intent. So that's the amendment, Madam Chair.
Discussion. If not, we're going to take the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay.
No.
The bill amendment passes. Members, that was the last one unless someone has anything. Anybody have an amendment? Representative Rukavina has an amendment. After that, that's it, folks, after Representative Rukavina, unless someone's got one. And Representative Rukavina, we do
it's
not
the
have...
The A7 amendment, I believe, Ms. Baker has.
A7.
It's the Pacers Patrol. And get it. And Madam Chair, it's... since Representative Dill started the little minerals article, I figured I'd, jump on it. So, while the esteemed passed out, Madam Chair, first of all, I'd like to remove the first section of the amendment.
Representative Rukavina, one second here, coming around. Representative Rukavina now moves the 8-2-3-2-3-A7 amendment. And now, Representative Rukavina, you're going to incorporate an oral amendment?
Yeah, I'd just like to remove Section 1, Subdivision 35, and the effective date, that whole thing. I'd like to take it out of the amendment.
Okay, so Representative Rukavina is incorporating orally, he's going to remove Section 1, Subdivision 35, on his A7 amendment, which his solution is the top part of page 1. Okay, so does everyone have the amendment? All right, Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, what the amendment does then in Section 2 is basically sets up a tax distribution formula like the taconite tax for non-ferrous mining, if that ever happens. And then what it does in Section 6 is, let me see here, Section 6 stops the automatic escalator from going on the mining company, the taconite tax this year. Section 7 adds 2 cents to where the mine or plant is to the cities and towns where the mine or plant is located. And I get the money by eliminating the what's called a taconite railroad distribution of taconite taxes, which I think is antiquated and needs to be revisited. And so that's where that 2 cents comes from. And the other penny or so would be distributed to it go into the Taconite Environmental Fund at the Iron Range Resource and Rehabilitation Agency. And then it's currently, if a mine and a plant is in two different local jurisdictions, as an example, Everett Mine, the mine is in Everett, the plant is out in a little township. It used to be distributed 60-40, the plant got more, and it corrects that. I think it should be 50-50. And since we've been making changes in property tax laws and everything else since 1978, this hasn't changed. And I think my two range comrades will leave this alone. So I'd appreciate your support.
Representative Dill and Representative Fuller, can we get you on the record here for a second? Representative Dill.
Well, I think this is robbing from Dill and Bach and giving to Rukavina and Sertich, but at that, even at that, I'm going to...
Did you say it's robbing from Bach?
Go ahead and... robbing from Dill and Bach and giving to Representative Sertich and from Anzell and Solberg as well, but knowing the generosity of us that we are going to support it.
Madam Chair, just to correct him, it's only robbing from Dill and Bach, but not from Representative Solberg or Ansel. So.
You might like that.
Yeah.
So, Representative Solberg, can we get you on the record on this one, too?
I'm okay with this, I think, yeah.
Okay, so questions, Representative Garofalo, or Representative Garofalo?
You know, Madam Chair, I thought it was bad before when I had to choose between a tax increase and getting rid of a tax increase. Now you're asking me to choose between Sertich and Dill. Is there any way I can divide this amendment, Representative Dill? No.
Thank you. Representative Colt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rukavina, I gotta be honest, the taconite tax and the mining taxes are somewhat of a mystery to me. Are we raising taxes in this, or are we just redistributing the existing tax?
In fact, we're not only not raising, we're stopping the automatic escalator that's in law, which I don't know what Mr. Eichholz might know what that would have meant for cents per ton, because it's tied to the enforcement price inflator, but I'm actually treating the mining companies fairly, more than fairly.
Ms. Baker or Mr. Michael?
Madam Chair, members, that the 2008 rate is $2.316, so a little over 32 cents. The estimate that I was given for 2009, which would, what Rukavina's bill does is it freezes the rate so that you'll use the 2008 rate 2 years in a row, that would have been $2.375, so that's about a 5 or 6 cent increase that won't be imposed. That's what the estimate is as of now.
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, I'll be happy to support your amendment here today. Make sure, and I know you care desperately about jobs up on the Iron Range, but many of those jobs are provided by the mines, as you know, and they're hurting as well right now too. And I know you know that better than me.
That's right.
So, Representative Rukavina, I appreciate the fact that we're maybe redistributing some of the existing money, and we're actually reducing the tax. And you know, I hope that whatever little bit we can do to help those companies employ more people doing good things, and I know you guys have needs up there as a result of the mining activity. That you know, it's tough on your roads, it's tough on a whole lot more than just your roads. But Representative Rukavina, as long as my friends Chairman Solberg and Representative Dill are okay, I'm happy to help you out here. Oh, and Representative David tells me he approved too.
Representative Rukavina, Representative Dill, anybody? Nope. Okay, members, Representative Emmer.
Madam Chair, I've got a quick question. It appears we're exempting from a tax base all companies that produce anything from one of these metals.
Section
1, 2. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, that's right. You said that.
Section, yeah, that's
right.
Section.
But we weren't, Madam Chair, we weren't doing that. We were going to just tax them in a different way.
Creatively. Further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries. Are there any other amendments? Are there any other amendments? Members, if there are no other amendments, we're going to vote on the bill now.
Yes.
There it is.
Yes.
There it is.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to raise some questions for the department on provision of the bill that I, at least, is not present for much conversation on, and that's the in the Article 6, Representative Marquardt's property tax bill, Sections 2 and 36, the sections related to property tax exemption for nonprofits. And I recognize the hard and good work of Representative Marquardt, of the Department of the Minnesota Council on Nonprofits, and perhaps others in crafting the language. I am a little concerned on some of the vagueness of the language. The word material is used in a number of different places and possibly in a number of different ways. And I know there's some nonprofits in my city that are concerned about consistent definitions of the words, consistent applications of those words. When we talk about the nonprofit sector in our economy and our society, it means a wide variety of organizations, from some of the little theater groups in my district to some of the largest hospitals in the state. So very different in size, very different in scope, very different in area of endeavor. And so will those words like material be defined consistently across all those different areas? Also concerned about the phrase reasonable justification. They talk about, they establish a test. They say that there's maybe some reasonable justification for a nonprofit not meeting one of those tests, and that would still be okay, but it's not clear what reasonable justification means. And again, is that going to be applied consistently in all situations across all different types of nonprofits? And I guess it's a consistency concern in as complex an area as that. So if the department has any ability to follow up with me offline, I would appreciate that. I can also provide them with more information as to my concerns. I appreciate the opportunity, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. And I want to, with the leave of the committee, a standard practice has been in the past in, on the honest tax bill is to give the staff the authority to reconcile the bill and spreadsheet. So if everyone's okay with that, we're going to ask them to do that on our behalf. This bill will be in Ways and Means tomorrow, so they still have some work to do here now. Further discussion? Further discussion? Representative Brock.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think we've had a great discussion about the bill that you've put together, and I think one of the testifiers might have said it best when he said there's some things we like, some things we don't like, and some things we're scared of. And, Madam Chair, as you had the difficult job, I just wanted to say thank you and give our appreciation of the tough decisions that you had to make. I wish I could say that I could support the bill and support the work that has been done to create this bill, but unfortunately I think it misses the mark. When I think about some of the things that are created in this bill and done in this bill, there's a lot of difficult choices. You know, we see an increase of an airport tax, increase of a sales tax potentially, an iTunes tax, an alcohol tax increase, a cigarette tax increase, a tax on heating fuels, tax expenditure choices that were made in this bill to reduce essentially to with mortgage deductions. That is going to harm our mortgage market and to harm our real estate market, and I'm very concerned about that. In a time when the economic downturn in the state and in the country is very closely aligned to what has gone on in both our real estate market and our mortgage market, it is the wrong direction to increase the cost for folks who are struggling to stay in their home, and the wrong direction to increase the cost of mortgages. We also talk a lot about the struggling nature of state and local governments, yet this bill increases the cost of borrowing for those same governments. It increases the cost for the folks who are buying the bonds, and it increases the cost of for issuing them as well. So then I can go through the specifics of the bill in terms of our concern over it even in greater detail. But this bill really constitutes in some senses, not on whole, but in some senses a bait and switch to the taxpayers. Last year the taxpayers were told that we're going to have a low income credit for those folks who are struggling to pay for gas tax increases. That now has been revoked in this bill. The jobs contracts that the state of Minnesota has paid are now essentially going to be revoked and null and void in this bill. And so the message that this bill sends to the folks who we need to invest in our communities and the folks who we need to create jobs for our citizens, it's a bad message, Madam Chair, and while I appreciate the difficult choices you had to make, I'm very concerned over the message sent in this bill. We already have high income taxes in the state of Minnesota. 95% of businesses run their business income through their personal taxes, which means that tax, this new 9% tax, is going to hit the small businesses and the job creators on the main street throughout the entire state. So, Madam Chair, this bill hurts families, it's going to hurt jobs, and it unfortunately is the wrong direction to go in this economy. And so I don't think that, as you teed up the bill yesterday, you talked about a Reagan vision. And the Reagan vision of reform would be reform for the sake of reform, not reform for the sake of grabbing more money into the state's coffers. And that's what the reform in this bill is intended to do, is to provide more dollars to the state for expenditures that are required by the budget targets. Representative Margaret, you talked about 98,000 lost jobs, and that's why job creation has to be our job number one. And this bill doesn't move in that direction. Madam Chair, you talked about hidden taxes and trying to get rid of the hidden taxes within our tax codes. But unfortunately, all this bill does is shift the hidden taxes from the folks who can most afford them to the folks who can least afford them. This bill moves in the direction of more regressivity in our tax code through the taxes that I previously mentioned. So as we struggle with these decisions, we need to do more than just solve the budget deficit. We need to do so in a responsible manner that also provides more transparency and openness within the process. This bill leaves $1.12 unknown, $1 billion unknown to the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota. This bill is not balanced. This bill violates the spirit of the balance of budget amendment that we all voted for, with the exception of Representative Gemmer and Lanning. So as we try to figure out how we're going to move forward and how we actually balance the budget, this bill doesn't get us there. And I'm trying to understand how we can say that, how we can actually finance the bills that we're going to be seeing on the House floor over the next few days, the health care finance bill, the ag finance bill, the state government finance bill, all those things, but we're $1.2 billion short to fund them. So we've got to be more responsible. We've got to focus on spending. And Madam Chair, I know you didn't set the targets, and I know you had a difficult job meeting the targets that were set by the leadership in the House and the Senate. But if we're going to do our job responsibly, we've got to balance the budget. And this bill falls short in that regard. So having said all that, Madam Chair, I appreciate how you run your committee. I appreciate the fairness that you provide to the minority in terms of the amendments and the opportunities to participate in the discussion. I think you allow the public good opportunities to testify about the things that they like and about the things that they don't like. And so while I am frustrated with the direction of the bill, I just wanted to say a personal thank you to you and to the entire staff for all your efforts going forward. And we're going to continue talking on the big picture. We're going to continue talking about specifics of the bill. But I know that we share one thing, and that's the hope that we move forward in the right direction.
Thank you, Representative Bott. Appreciate that.
Madam Chair, I'd like a roll call, too.
And Representative Bott requests a roll call. We're going to call for the vote in just 1 second, and I would only add for the public that who may not have heard the kind of big speeches yesterday in favor of the bill. We're not going to repeat those now. But Representative Broad, I thank you as well. I thank all the members of the minority. This has been a really tough year, and it's tough for all members. It isn't. Both sides of the aisle are not united here. People are having a tough time. But I do want to just remind people, this bill is raising $1.5 billion. The governor is raising $1 billion. The Minnesota House is cutting $1.6 billion. The governor is cutting $1.5 billion. We need to get scale and perspective. The Minnesota House Democrats are actually proposing larger cuts than the governor, and our revenues are not that different. A lot of it is semantics, but this bill has massive, significant reform, changes the income and corporate tax system significantly more progressively, and we absolutely are making choices here. Value judgments to say that those who are the most affluent in Minnesota are going to have to contribute a little bit now, and in fact, for a number of years, they've been getting a relatively better deal in the tax code. They are paying about 8% of their income in taxes. Everyone else is in the 9s, 10s, 11s, and 12s, so this is going to bring some fairness to that. Yes, we're raising revenue. We're doing that through a fourth-tier income tax. We're doing that through some attempts to recoup government costs through user fees on alcohol and cigarettes. We have a significant jobs package in this bill for our large and small businesses in Minnesota, and we're attempting to protect the taxpayers. And in fact, we're going to have a lot less damage taking place for our cities and counties and our local fiscal relationships than being proposed by the governor. So members, I do appreciate every member's work here this year and the staff, and I know there are some members who are struggling with this even now as we speak, and we're now going to take the roll. Ms. Bergman.
One trustee?
Yes.
Anderson?
No.
Broad?
No.
Carlson?
Aye.
Davis?
No.
Gabby?
Aye.
Gemmer?
No.
Bill?
Pass. Yes.
Cephas?
No.
Downey?
No.
Eastland?
No.
Gardner?
No.
Garofalo?
No.
Hilstrom?
Aye.
Coonan?
Aye.
Cole?
No.
Lanning?
No.
West?
Aye.
Liebling?
Yes.
Loeffler?
Yes.
Loon?
No.
Markworth?
Yes.
Mulry?
Aye.
Murphy?
Aye.
Reiner?
Yes.
Orsadina?
Pass.
Roof?
No.
Colbert?
Yes.
Silvery?
Yes.
Zeller?
No.
Bill? Orsadina?
Pass.
Bill?
Yes.
Orsadina?
Madam Chair, is it appropriate for me to say something before I go?
You can't, and we'll take the speech after the roll is closed. Representative Orsadina?
Orsadina votes yes.
Okay. Madam Chair.
We're going to just announce the vote here for a moment, and then we're going to have Representative Orsadina. I think Representative Bill would like to speak as well. The ayes being 16, the nays being 14, the bill passes and is sent to Ways and Means. And if members can just stay a moment, Representative Lukovina has requested to speak as the Representative Bill has given me the eye as well. And then we're just going to have a housekeeping item and then we'll adjourn. Representative Lukovina, please.
Well, Madam Chair, you know, it's the responsibility of government to take care of certain things and we need revenue to do it. Whether it's riding on our roads or funding our schools or taking care of our most vulnerable. And, you know, I've always tried to be responsible in that regard, and I've also always tried to be what I call a progressive, and that means progressive taxes. And there are very good parts of this bill, but there are parts that have troubled me. And like I told you, Madam Chair, I have been tossing and turning for the last two nights, and I've been having some nightmares, and you know they were about everybody on this committee, I might add, on both sides. But you know, I realize that we have to have a tax bill, and I don't think anybody in this committee can forget the fact that since the first day of this committee, I've been saying that we've got to raise revenue, because if we don't raise some sort of revenue, we're going to do serious damage to people that can help the situation they're in. The governor has admitted he needs revenue. Some of the amendments here today, and I tried to do it fairly, members. You know, I tried to do it with a surcharge, and whether it blinks on and blinks off right away, represent polls or not, that was always my intention, because there was precedent to do that. You know, I think the wealthy have been getting a lot of tax breaks since the early 1980s and the Ronald Reagan years on the federal level, and since the later 1980s when we conformed here under Governor Perpich and went from 13 or 14 different income tax rates to two and then back to three. Now, there are people on this committee that say, well, alcohol taxes haven't been raised in 20 years, Madam Chair, so we should raise them. Income taxes haven't been raised in more than 20 years. That top rate in this state used to be 14.5%, and you're raising it to 9%, and you would think you were the Wicked Witch of Minnesota for doing that. But you're not, because you're just trying to get back. But we're nowhere near what people used to be. I just don't like this bill and certain parts of it because of the way we're nickel and diamond people. Madam Chair, I'm giving you a vote today to get this out of tax committee because that's my responsibility being in the majority. I don't know if I'm going to vote for this bill again in its present form as it moves along. You know, I had a gambling tax I couldn't get a hearing on. Raises $1.2 million. Billion, excuse me. You know, and a lot of people say gambling taxes are regressive, but I guess, Representative Broad, using your theory, you don't can choose to gamble or not a lot easier maybe than you can choose a few other things that were mentioned. Who knows what's going to happen with the whole tax situation. Madam Chair, I know you've worked your hardest to put a bill together that was as fair as you could make it. I think you could have been a little fairer in certain areas, and so could some of the members of our caucus have been a little fairer when it comes to the poor. And we know who smokes cigarettes, Representative Murphy and Representative Dabney. It's the poorest of the poor. And they balanced our budget 3 years ago with a 75-cent tax
and now they're being asked to do it again in this bill. I just don't think it's right. I've said it before, I'll say it again and shut up. Where I come from, you know, the biggest sin of all is greed. I don't see anything in the Bible that refers to everybody's drinking wine all over the Bible. You know, when did it become a sin, for God's sake? Yeah, I don't know. They made wine, you know, wine out of water. So, I mean, you know, where I come from, that's greed. And a lot of the poorest people that are paying taxes and unfair regressive taxes had nothing to do with this economy and this downturn in our economy. It was the people at the top. So with that, Madam Chair,
well, I'll tell you, sometimes you got to walk the plank, don't you?
Thank you, Representative Brookstein. Representative Dill.
Well, there isn't a whole lot more that I could add that Representative Rukavina didn't say. You know, I support raising some additional revenue. I said that I didn't want to see the top rate go past 7.85%, but I thought a surcharge made sense. There was precedent for it in past years, the blink-on, blink-off component of it. I guess my last comment is I talked about septic systems last time we were in this discussion, and I just feel like the septic tank is still backed up and somebody's still trying to go in the house while I'm trying to pump it.
Further discussion before we adjourn. Members, I just an announcement, and the bill has passed, and I really do really appreciate everybody's compromising and negotiating. And even if you're a no, you know, you contributed to the process. So we are going to remove the public finance bill and the omnibus public finance bill and the technical bill the next week, because I think we've all had it in taxes for a while. So we will meet next Tuesday, members. Next Tuesday. We are adjourned. Hey.